Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Jake Gibb. You're in the net live.
This is Taiba Hanif Park, and you are in the net live.
Aloha, this is Mike Lambert, and you are in the net live.
Loy Ball, and you're on the net live.
Ryan Malar, you're in the net live.
Hey, this is Heather Bowen, and you're live in the net. Nope, that was totally wrong.
Hey, this is Karch Kira, and you're in the net live with Willie and Barney.
Welcome, welcome. The Net Live, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for being here. 28th of March. Is that right? Is it March? All right, springtime. Welcome, everybody, to another show. We have a good one planned for you today. Myself, Kevin Barnett, in the loft, along with Chris Geeter-McGee and DJ Roche, and Reed is in the Siberian Outpost, just back from a Champions League Final Four event. We'll get to that in just a moment, but let you know what we have for you here today. Aaron Wachfogel, AVP professional, and now business entrepreneur. We've talked to him before about his new clothing line, Autonomous USA, and he has launched in combination with Swell Magazine, is it?
Swell.com.
Swell.com. And,
good stuff.
He's having some good sales, having some good success with his stuff. A lot of neat product out there. I've seen it. Our own guy, Josh Glazebroker, does some work for us. He's done some work for him. T-shirts, boardies, the like.
Do you still call him AVP star, or do you just say Pro Beach Volleyball star?
I gotta get into that habit, yeah. Pro Beach Volleyball star. I keep saying AVP, that's the brand, and we all know that's gone. So Aaron Wachfogel will join us to talk about transitioning, talk about how he's gone about this business, which he had started before the problems happened, so he was in a pretty good position. Also, UC Irvine head man John Spraw will come in to talk with us about the men's season so far and why he's been voting Ohio State number one. That's what I want to know.
Who he just absolutely smashed in three.
That's right. Ohio State was supposed to be number one. That number one vote better not be there this week after they got destroyed by Irvine and UC San Diego.
Will we find out?
We have to. Yeah, we'll
I think
have it.
It happens usually around
we get it about halfway through halfway where the through. First place you can hear about it. So John Spraw will be here. We'll have the College Volleyball Weekly, J. Rob and Mike. We'll give them the rundown from the past week. We'll get to our NBA volley teams. Finally, we've been promoting that for a while. And we will have more from USAV CEO Doug Beal. I know people slogged through about a half hour of Doug, going slow last week. But this is one of those things where we have to learn sometimes. It's not all entertainment. You got to learn on this show about the sport, about what's happening. Doug Beal is the CEO of the largest volleyball organization in the United States. So when he has something to say or we have a topic we need to talk to him about, something as important as beach qualification, we put him on, and you better listen to it. Because there's good facts in there.
What's he talking about today?
Today, we're going to hear from Doug about the Hugh McCutchen situation. We spent a lot of time on that. We finally talked to Hugh. We were interested to hear from his boss and how his boss dealt with one of his best, brightest employees looking for employment elsewhere. So kind of a unique situation. We have a few minutes with Doug on that. So last week's show, we had Doug for 30 minutes. We had Jen Kessie, and beach qualification was on here. I don't know if Jeremy, you know, he was in here last week. Kind of gave him a rough time about his hair and everything else, what he was looking like, and he was trying to talk himself up to Jen. He's cleaned it up this week. All of a sudden, the pomade is going in the hair, the wax. He's got a new T-shirt.
I sense jealousy from Kevin. I sense it a lot.
I got a lot of grief from people this week in email about my lack of game.
What people don't you didn't have game.
What
last
people
week.
Don't know
did not.
What people don't know is that when this show ended and the four of us talked, Reed lit you up. For your game, and I wish we had audio of it because he was right on the money. I was a little disappointed as well, and I know you got a lot of flack for it on the emails. I read those emails, and you're going to bounce back strong.
A lesser man would quit and just say, forget it, Jeremy, you can have her. But that's not happening here. I'm coming back strong. When we have them in 2 weeks, I think we're going to try and make it happen. When we have them in studio, you just wait.
April's coming to MC the event. Love it. And it's in your house, too. I mean, you have home court advantage.
Absolutely.
You got a lot going on for you.
Absolutely.
I had a lot of positive feedback on Jen Kessie.
Yeah.
Loved her. What great fire, fun, all those to describe her. And I concurred with all of them. She was fantastic. She was honest, talked about the qualification, what she didn't like about it, what she liked about it, had fun with you guys. I mean, she was a breath of fresh air, I thought.
It was nice that we had her in for some serious stuff before we got to the circus. And I thought that her energy level, like you said, that she was happy to be here. It was a lot of fun. And I hadn't talked to Jen before. And look forward to talking to her again. And a lot more than Jeremy.
Jealousy. I didn't think I was going to be here today.
No baby yet. The wife due today, essentially,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, contractions were happening last night.
So if I look
and
over...
And I thought about emailing or texting you guys and saying, listen, I'm out.
You had gone dark for the last 24 hours. I was concerned. And then the door rang and Jeremy came in. Oh, no. Jeremy's here before Geeter. A little concerned. So everybody's happy, healthy.
It was funny. Last night, you know, of course I'm a little more panicked than everybody else. You know, grandma was fine. I'm like, you know, timing the contractions that are, you know, 50 minutes apart. So you're not supposed to panic at that point. But I'm packing and ready to go. And she's asking me what time I'm going to be home from the show.
The second one's always different.
Yeah.
My wife had contractions the night before with the second one. Started, stopped. My mother-in-law came out. The next morning, I said, how you feeling? She said, I'm feeling okay. Fine. I went to practice. I got a call halfway through practice. We're at the hospital.
No.
Walking around. Things are okay. I said, all right. Well, fine. I called her after practice. Oh, no, we're still here. I'm just kind of walking around. Not too bad. It was right next to the training center. They were literally adjacent properties. And I said, all right, well, I'm going to go have some lunch and go to the training room and stuff, and then I'll see you in a little while. You know, nothing like the first one where you're panicked, like, I got to be there. So I went and did my leisurely thing and wandered over to the hospital. She's still walking around outside. And then literally inside of 45 minutes from the moment I arrived, baby.
Wow.
Just shot out of a cannon.
Yeah, I heard the second time. It goes a little bit quicker. I then tried to sneak in can I play a quick par 3, 9 holes with, you know, we did for Luke's birthday. I threw in that it was Luke's birthday. It's Luke Walton's birthday today, right? It's 31. But we do this series, and we do it at the Ratty, which is the old Radisson Hotel. It's a par 3, and we do a 4 out of 7 series. And we're in our third series right now, and it's 2-2. So we're trying to sneak in game 5. So since she told me, what time are you coming back from the show? I snuck in, well, what do you think? Can I play the Ratty? Luke's birthday, try to get game 5 in. And she gave me a yes on that one, too.
You married the right woman.
So man. I got a good day plan. I get to come to the show, quick 9-hole at the Ratty, give them a bang down, go up 3-2 in the series, come home.
Have a baby.
Have dinner, and maybe, you know, tonight or tomorrow morning, head to the hospital. Perfect.
Maybe a baby.
That being said, I'll probably get a panic call, and I'll be cutting golf out and going straight to the hospital. Who knows? But I'm excited either way. Do you love the second one as much as the first? As soon as it comes out?
Yeah, it's good to have two, because if you lose one, then you have another. Yeah.
Okay, just... concerned.
Hey, if you want to check out those previous shows, listen to Doug, listen to Jen, get in on Beach Qualification. Check them out on iTunes. Listen, it's free, $0. Search in iTunes, The Net Live, or Volleyball, and under podcasts, you will find us. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNetLive. Like us on Facebook. We have questions out there. We had kind of a couple fun ones this week that were out there. Lots of feedback and stuff from the fans. Really good stuff. Reed, you are with us from Russia. You're back from Final Four. We know you won the semifinal. Tell us the rest of the story.
Oh, good to be with you guys. We lost in the finals. Excuse me. And it was it's definitely still hurting. And I'm going to be. We lost to Trentino. It's it was their third in a row, and you could definitely tell that they have been playing a while together. At least the core of their team have invested a lot of time together, and they came out strong. It was in their basically their home gym, packed house, and just absolutely obliterated us in that first set. We came back in the second set, edged them out, tied it up 1-1, and then, man, we had our chances. I watched it again today, this afternoon, and just had lots of chances on our side of the net to take game 3, and unfortunately let those slide and got down 2-1, and then actually had something going in the fourth set too, and then there was a missed call that I felt was pretty blatant, and I questioned the ref. And I know the commentator said that I used choice language, but I didn't. I asked him a question. I said, "Did you hear that? It was right in front of you." And
And he gave him a point. He gave me a yellow card. And so I feel terrible. I feel terrible to put my team in that situation. And it was unfortunate because it really seemed to change the mood and the momentum shift. And we just kind of unraveled at that point. So it was very disappointing. You know, when you get in these matches, it's a ton of fun to play and compete. But to come up short stings. And probably will never really go away.
Reed, I hate to cut you off. Don't beat yourself up about the yellow card. Okay? That's not why you guys lost. You didn't let anybody down. It's your job, captain of the team. You ask the ref a question.
See, that's the problem. I'm not the captain of the team, so that's probably my first. That's probably my first problem.
Who's the captain of the team?
Loy.
No, he isn't. Co-captain. I mean, let's be honest. You and Loy run the show. Not just Loy. Your job, too. Stick up for your teammates. You did that. You didn't swear. You didn't do anything out of normal. Anybody in that situation with passion and all the money on the line and everything, and you want to win badly, emotions are going to rise. And then the poor ref has never competed in his life at anything and didn't recognize that.
I love how it gets phrased here. I just said to him, "Did you see that? It was right in front of you." As though it was said that way during the match.
Well, no, Reed had to be a little louder because it was, 10,000 people in there screaming.
Of course.
No, it was super loud in there, and I definitely reacted, and I went at him. There's no doubt about it, and I don't want to make, the reflections on the game all about that, but, I talked to the ref after the game, and I basically said, if you're ref in a final, there's so much emotion and so much on the line. You got to expect some of this to come. And if I cross the line, I've been playing this game for a long time, 12 years internationally. Tell me I cross the line and give me a warning or something. Don't just award the other team a point right away. There was no threats, but be that as it may, we had a lot of chances as a team. It was great to be in that match. I will say it was a great environment, especially for the other team. And they played, I'm telling you, if you're a young player out there, there's some guys on that team that you need to watch. And you need to watch very carefully. Juan Terena, the outside hitter, he's a defective Cuban who's a naturalized Italian.
A defective Cuban, not a defective Cuban.
Thank you for the correction. And Kaczynski on the outside, they have a great Brazilian setter. And, one of the things I noticed of their middle blockers, if you're a coach out there and you have trouble having your middles going hard, you got to watch their middles. I mean, those guys would come screaming in and would absolutely just thunder the ball. And it was tough. It's tough to stop when you've got that much firepower coming at you. But like I said, we had our chances, and it's always hard to come up short.
We've talked before on this show about international referees and their tendency to get involved in the action and how I don't care for that. They don't have a very measured response. And you see that in so many other big sports where there's a measured response when the emotions are high, championship games, high-level playoff games, where the referees give a little bit of latitude and essentially say to the players, look, take it easy.
Yeah.
We all know this is important. I'm going to give you a pass this time when it's not that dramatic before issuing the card. And it used to be in the international game, you could get a yellow card and that would be your warning. Then you get a red card. That was a point. Well, now they've changed it a few years ago to yellow card equals a point. And I don't really agree with that because it doesn't give the referee a demonstrative way to say, I'm warning you. So the referee never gets that. The referee could say it to the player, I'm warning you. But the referee doesn't get the opportunity to, for their own ego, their own control of the match, their appearance of control of the match, to say, I'm warning you that this needs to change. So the referee's left without the tools to really do that.
Bottom line, the Italian Steve Javi was up high, right? I mean, the NBA ref, Javi that just loves to give tees.
Right.
That's who was reffing.
Who has the argument with Tim Duncan? Is that
all the time.
He just tees up Tim Duncan from the bench, as a matter of fact. Duncan gets teed up.
I mean, NBA refs are complete panics. But the good ones, you see control LeBron's and the Kobe's and the D-Wade's and give them a little, take a little, talk to them, warn them. You know who the good ones are. Hand in the back, give them a little talk on the way back down. All the guys got to say is Reed didn't see it or Reed, whatever you got to say, and then, warn Reed and let Reed back up and play.
But part of the issue also is the fact that these guys don't speak English. many of them, and many of them do speak some English. Some speak better English than others, but there are many international referee out there that have such a limited amount of English language that you never even know if you can talk to them, and sometimes the other team's talking to them in Spanish if it happens to be a Spanish-speaking country, because you don't have your own country. You each bring a referee to an event, or in Champions League, the referees move around between countries. You don't have your own referee reffing your matches. If you're from Italy, it has to be a different referee. But at the same time, there's always these language crossovers or lack of, and it makes the communication more challenging, and certainly the interpretation of that communication more challenging, and it's easier to have confusion where Reed is just going, hey, come on, dude. Seriously, like, you know, that wasn't a great call, and I'm just here trying to win a volleyball match, and it was right in front of you, man.
I was responding in that particular call to a sound. You know how it is when you're playing the game. Touches are hard to call. I get it. I totally get it, especially when you got your linesmen are part of the home club. You know, they're not hired, so to speak. You know, it's a hard thing, but I was responding to the sound. But, you know, I always seem to lose it on refs, especially in my latter years. And it's just, you know what, it doesn't help anything. It doesn't change anything. I need to grow up and learn. But I tell you, the thing that's frustrating me the most when I play, especially in Italy, and this is kind of going back to the World Championships, if you remember our match against the Italians.
Oh, yeah.
They've got guys that can play the game, and I just wish they would stop the flopping and stop making it a sideshow and just play hard and play the game. And it's just so distracting sometimes to play against players that it's kind of like the Vlade Divac, or having a whole team. What if you had an entire team plus coach of floppers? It's,
I'm hearing that they're in your head, Reed.
I definitely have some resentment that I need to get resolved, and I'm going to go ahead and call my my psychotherapist to help me out. But
just give me a ring.
I'm with you. I'm not happy with the Italians either, and their constant begging and complaining. It's like, you guys can play the game well. Stick with that, please. In other news, there's a whole beach tour we've never mentioned. In all of our talk about the beach, we never mentioned the Norseca beach tour that's going on.
And Americans won it.
First yesterday. Weekend, this weekend, was Cayman Islands.
Cayman Islands. Beautiful weather, I heard.
Lauren Fendrick.
Brooke Cayman Hansen. Islands. Is that where they, the firm? You guys ever read The Firm?
Yeah.
That's
the movie with
Red Stripe.
Yeah. Red Stripe. That's Jamaica, my man.
I know, but the beer that he drank was Red Stripe.
Okay.
Way to tie that in there.
Is that one of those movie mistakes where Bruce Willis
is on
the phone in Washington, but he has a Pac Bell payphone?
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, so Lauren Fendrick, Brooke Hansen,
yep.
Take down gold. Big news? Good news?
Yeah, I think it's great. I think it's great for Brooke, who, as she tweeted not that long ago, has had more partners in 1 year than she had her whole career. Remember, she played with Kerry for one tournament in Cincinnati, and she's been training all offseason with Angie. Back with Angie. They had her best season of her career was with Angie Akers a few years back, made it to final in Chicago. And Angie dumps her for Nicole once Kerry dumped Nicole. So for her to come out with Lauren Fendrick and go to the Norsecas and win and represent the United States. And I tweeted her yesterday and she kind of came back with a, hey, I said, what a great way to start out 2011. And she came back with, I'll take a win any way I can get it. So, you know, they're happy, they're proud. You go anywhere and represent the United States, you know, it's a good thing.
And this is a tournament that there's going to be more of, or a series, I guess I should say, that there will be more of. The next event is coming up, let's see, I had it just a second ago, April 8th through the 10th in Guatemala.
And the Canadians won the men's.
That's right, we had a couple teams that tied for fifth. Will Strickland and Lucas Wislanowski.
How about you just call him Lucas?
Yeah, Lucas Wisniewski of Houston. They lost to a Mexican team. And then John Mesko and Paul Baxter lost to a team from Canada. So, Norseca event. It's one of those, I don't know how much coverage it gets. I don't know even live streaming is available for Norseca. If it's out there, let me know. But there is a website you can go to, norseca.org. It has a lot of information, not only about the beach events that are going on, but also qualification, which will be happening for the men and women indoor teams this year, and lots of other interesting information. Norseca, for those of you that don't know, is North, Central, and Caribbean. That's the zone in which the Americans participate in international volleyball. So there are five zones throughout the world. Norseca happens to be our zone. So you can check it out, norseca.com.
Dropping knowledge like it's hot right there, Barney. Nice work.
C-E-C-A.org, I should say. Norseca.org. Check that out.
And where can we watch Reed's match?
laola1tv.com. It is archived. You can check it out. Reed said it was off the hook. These Champions League matches are hugely popular in Europe. And for those that grow up with only United States volleyball, have no idea what a big deal this is professionally overseas and how they put people in the seats.
Yeah.
For a lot of matches, good teams, you're talking $5,000 per for a home match in small gyms, packing them out, built like a business rotary club. Then you go to some of these bigger matches, it's 10,000, 12,000. Some places like Slovenia, we've talked about 12,000 people for a Champions League match. Crazy.
I mean, it's a big deal. And you could hear it in Reed's voice. And before the show, the three of us could sure hear it in his voice. I mean, he's very bummed. And as he said, it's, you know, you probably don't get over this. And I have bad news for him. You don't. It's almost the 18-year anniversary of Northridge losing the national championship. And I'm going to tell you, every May 8th, I call Coley Kime and Matt Unger and my former coach, John Price, and we do pout about it, and we do whine about it, and we remember plays and opportunities, and we still lost three straight. But we, for some reason in our minds, still think we should have won. And it's 18 years ago, bro.
Should I start comparing my flag football games to the NFL?
No, because that's not a big deal. A national championship at a college level is a humongous deal.
Okay.
Losing an NCAA championship game in any sport is a huge deal.
True.
For you to say your flag football league with your sons who are 7 years old in the NFL.
I like how you just turned it around.
Is asinine.
That's twice in 3 weeks.
I don't
you've
care.
Used that for
good.
Me. That's good.
Angry. I can't even believe he would even.
And he looked you down.
I'm sorry that when you were at Pepperdine, you weren't good enough.
First round
to get to the national championship game.
No.
So you don't know what it's like to play in the big one.
It's become personal all of a sudden.
In the NCAA, it's a big deal.
Hey, I have a European runner-up medal. Dude,
I know,
need to show that to you?
I
lost the Champions League final myself.
I know in Supercross, there's no Final Four, so you don't get it. You didn't grow up like we did here in the States, hoping to get to a Final Four.
Like we did here in the States. Where did I grow up?
I don't know.
All of a sudden, I'm President Obama. I grew up in Kenya.
You grew up in, I don't know, Illinois, but you didn't like...
Not
Paul,
part of the union,
like,
Illinois.
You didn't like regular sports. I'm sorry, you didn't. You grew up liking motocross, and they don't have a Final Four. So your big dream was to go to, you know, Angel Stadium and jump off the dirt.
Speaking of big dreams, the London Games coming up in 2012. This offers terrific opportunities. Whoever hosts the Olympic Games, it offers a tremendous opportunity for those with, not citizenship, but descent from the mother country to participate. So in the sport of volleyball, not very good, not very big in Great Britain, all of a sudden there's some people kind of coming out of the woodwork to try and play for Great Britain in the Olympic Games. And this came up 8 years ago in the Greek Games in Athens. You had softball. There was a lot made of the fact that there were American players, college players that had Greek ancestry, one or two generations back, that could claim they were 1/64th Greek, and then they were eligible to join the Greek softball team because Greece didn't have a softball team. So you get to play in the Olympics.
Georgia men's volleyball team, those were the two Brazilian guys that had never stepped foot in Georgia. They played for the bronze.
Exactly. Yeah. So that situation coming up again with London. My question to you guys is, would you play? If you had an opportunity.
And I was good enough?
Well, if you could go over and claim that you were of British descent, maybe blood of the king, could you in fact,
I'm in.
Or would you in fact do it?
I'm in.
Yeah.
It's the Olympics. I mean, you're going to get heckled.
Let's ask Walkvogel about that. He and Strickland are trying to do it for Ireland. Because Strickland's
Irish, apparently.
Yeah.
Is that a problem if you play for another country's national team?
No. Mark Williams played on the beach Australian team.
Well,
he got
Australia.
A fourth.
Yeah, he grew up there.
I'm saying.
Yeah.
Well, he went to uni high here in L.A. He didn't grow up there.
And didn't he grow up there till he came to high school?
He was there for a few years.
Okay. Because I've heard several discussions about people who, you know, they never even grew up there. They never even set foot there, really.
Yeah, that's
their
true.
Their parent or grandparent is from the other country, so they get the opportunity to claim citizenship and go.
We made a joke in Beijing. When those guys won, the Georgia guys had a huge upset, and they were running into the crowd you know, to go grab a flag and run around. We're like, do they know which flag to grab? They had no idea what the Georgia flag was.
It's a great call. I don't think anybody should get grief for it. It's the Olympics. Yeah, if you can't go here, if you have another avenue to go, go. I don't see what the big deal is. But
yeah,
inevitably, there's some discussion. Somebody up there, oh, it's disrespectful to the United States. No, it's not.
You know, Steve Gutowski, someone just wrote this on the board, and I was going to mention him. He played for Great Britain.
That's who it is. He's trying to play.
Yeah. And he was over there for – he was on the FIVB for a while trying. He's a good little player. Played with DiPiero last year. Got some fifths, got some sevenths. Played with Karambula at the end, Cincinnati. So he's a good player.
He's going to have to find himself a partner.
I absolutely think he should go for it, 100%.
All right. All right, we're going to go to break in just a second. Aaron Wachfogel is going to join us on the other side, talk about Autonomous USA,
yay,
his new clothing company, and his success with that as it has launched.
Is he in the queue?
He's in the queue. He's ready to go. But we wanted to get a couple of notes out there, a couple of sad notes in the volleyball world. Dan Aranda, a gentleman who owns volleyball.com, a website there and store, big supporter of the show from the very beginning when we first started. Guy who supported our show in a big way and was very meaningful for us and our success early on. He suffered a stroke, a seizure a year ago at Stanford at the Final Four. Nobody knew what was wrong. He spent 45 days in the hospital, was diagnosed with a brain tumor. A couple of young kids my age, and now Dan is struggling a lot. He's actually headed into hospice care. His mother can no longer care for him. His family can no longer care for him. Really a sad thing. And if you'd like to check out more about Dan, perhaps help him out. He has a Caring Bridge website, caringbridge.org/visit/Dan Aranda, A-R-A-N-D-A-1. You can check it out there and learn more about Dan. He was a big friend of the show and really a sad thing to see for him and his family. Paul Lottman also, his dad passed away due to a heart attack, I think last week, 2 weeks ago. And now Donnie Killian, the guy mentioned on the show last week.
We were just talking about him. Yeah, and Don Killian Sr. Passed away over the weekend, battling cancer for 12 years, but you'd never know it. I mean, you talk about a guy who just attacked life and a great personality. He was a member of the 1977 National Championship USC team. So, Don Killian.
Yeah, a bunch of sad stuff for some folks out there in the world of volleyball, but we wish them the best, the folks that are still left here.
Aaron Wachfogel on the other side.
The Net Live, right back. About the USYVL, the United States Youth Volleyball League, having taught over 100,000 kids ages 7 to 15 the sport of volleyball, the league's proven techniques, super fun approach, and self-esteem lifting methods are unmatched. Truly, volleyball starts here. For more information about the league and programs in your area, visit usyvl.org. That's usyvl.org. Welcome back to Net Live. Finishing out March. Beautiful day here hanging out in the loft. DJ Roche spinning it. Geeter got his computer working this week.
Almost lost all my stuff.
Oh, man, you don't back up anything.
And I tell you, that it really taught me a lesson. Back up your stuff, bro.
you need to do it.
That was scary.
Still to come, John Spry from UC Irvine will be here. We'll have the College Volleyball Weekly. More information from Doug Beal about Hugh McCutcheon. But right now we have our first guest.
We have a little buddy on the line here. He's a I don't want to call him an AVP star anymore. He's a pro beach volleyball star. He's also a former six-man champion and MVP. Greatest player of all time from the University of Pacific. Now an entrepreneur and a businessman. Started his clothing line, Autonomous. You can see it on swell.com. Ladies and gentlemen, Aaron Wachtfogel.
Hey, guys.
Hi, Aaron.
That's quite an applause. You guys have a lot of people in the studio today.
We do. We're doing a live show on location, and people are real excited to have you on. Aaron, how are you, buddy?
Good. I'm really excited that you didn't call me a superstar, because I feel like that gets thrown around a lot. Everybody in the NBA these days is a superstar, but what happened to just straight-up stars? There should only be like one or two superstars out there, and I'm definitely not one of those guys. So
is it okay to call you a star?
Thanks for keeping that straight. A star?
Yeah.
Borderline. Crowds. Yeah, maybe some crowds.
You're a Manhattan Beach Open winner, so around here in South Bay you are.
Okay. Yeah, I appreciate that. It feels good.
Now, Aaron, usually we're asking you about getting ready for the season and how exciting and the AVP schedule. None of that's going on. So what are you doing in terms of beach volleyball before we get to your clothing line?
You guys are touching a lot of subjects today, actually.
Yep.
I can't believe that Barney just said it's wrapping up March. Normally I'd be full on, ready to go, great shape, gearing up for our first tournament, usually like right around April. But I've been working out and staying fresh. And actually, you guys were talking about Norseca, and Billy and I just signed up to go to Dominican in the middle of April. So it's up to the USA who they pick for those two spots, but they're trying to make a push this year to send some good teams over, because I guess some of the other Norseca countries have kind of been talking a little trash and playing some games, so they want to send some teams over there to do some damage. So hopefully we can get over there, get that bid, and get over there. And there's a FIVB World Challenge the week before that, and then there's a Norseca and the Dominican. I think in one of those you can get that, you can earn that berth for the U.S. now the Olympic qualifying has changed. So we could go, help the country out and get that backup berth in case for some reason we don't have two teams in the top 16 on the big tour.
So, Aaron.
So I'm just going to be gearing up for that.
There's the Corona Wide Open, the NVL.
Yes.
USAV is going to have tournaments. Are you planning on playing in as many as possible, or where's your stance on that?
I'm kind of waiting to see how it all breaks down. I talked to Billy Berger last week and tried to see where he was at with everything. It has to make sense. I know Billy and I would like to play in as much as possible, but we have to make sure with travel costs and everything that it makes sense to get out there and play. If there's going to be six good teams at a tournament with $50,000 total prize money, you could go win the tournament and make money, but if you get second or third, you might not be breaking even, is the reality of it. So that's something that you have to consider when making those travel plans.
Is this the least fired up you've ever been to start a season?
I don't think you'd say I'm fired up. I definitely am excited about the possibility of playing, and I've been working full-time too, so my time on the beach is more precious, and I appreciate it more than ever, you could say. But fired up, it's probably the first season where I haven't gotten into it, training starting in the end of January with some goals in mind. It's hard to set goals. We don't know what's out there.
Sounds like you're more fired up for VCU Butler than for your beach one.
You had to
I don't think
show.
I don't think Butler right. can be beat. I don't think it's possible.
Aaron, tell us a little about your clothing line, Autonomous. First of all, where did the name come from?
Autonomous, you're free to do whatever you want, kind of in charge of your own destiny, and you kind of make your life what you want it to be. I thought that was a good name considering what I wanted to do with the company, and I think it's always good if people can do what they want. It usually makes them the happiest. So autonomous people are good people. It started because I'm really picky about the shorts I wear, and I would be trying to find some board shorts that fit right and would be good for volleyball and for all the other working out stuff. I didn't do a lot of running, cross-training, track stuff in the gym, on the beach. And board shorts, while looking really good, really aren't that great for working out. So I tried to find a material it would kind of let me blend a basketball slash board short style together and create something that's amazing looking, but also great for the performance minded person.
Yeah, I find it interesting. You have drawstrings on all of your shorts, and that was always one of the things with board shorts to me, is I was between two sizes, so either you were seeing half my butt, or I looked like I had them painted on.
Plumber's crack.
Yeah, I wanted to avoid the elastic waistband conundrum for volleyball. That was great in the 80s when Stokes was wearing them up past his belly button, but thank God we moved on from that. But yeah, what I did to hopefully help you with that, Barney, is instead of creating sizes 30, 32, 34, whatever, I did every size basically. So I know me personally, I'm a 35, and a lot of guys that right. like Todd and Phil last year and Sean, I was like, what size are you guys? And everyone said 35 actually. So
love me.
There's every size. There's one every inch. So hopefully you can find something that works.
Tell us about the design process and getting started with finding a textile manufacturer, getting designs together. I mean, this is a huge undertaking.
Yeah, it was a year in the making, really. I thought I'd be able to launch before last season, but I had issues with manufacturers and just getting it right. They're for sure the ones that tell you, yeah, it'll be ready in 2 weeks or whatever, and then 2 weeks later they've done nothing with it, and you have to call them every day and stay on top of it. So it took a year to really get it all together and get a product out there that I could be proud of. I didn't want to get something out there that was just kind of okay. I wanted, when I released it, to be something that would be awesome and everybody would want to come back and get more of them. So after going through a couple manufacturers, I found a good one. We're trying to make as much as we can in the United States because I think bringing back some manufacturing to the U.S. is a good thing. So we do some of our stuff in the U.S. and some in Taiwan, and I did some of the designs, and I had some of my buddies do some of the designs because I wanted to keep it young and fresh and kind of like a surf feel. We kind of want to be like a beachy puma, which I think has come across well.
Beachy
and,
puma?
That before. Beachy puma, yeah.
Hey, I'm looking at him right. I think beachy puma. That's an apt description, beachy puma.
Yeah, West Coast beachy puma.
Fantastic. Hey, can I? What's the goal? Would you like to do college team?
Millions of dollars.
Club,
that's the goal.
Yeah, I know. But in the volleyball world goal, is there
Steve Timmons. This is the next Steve Timmons.
Gotcha.
That's who we're talking to.
Thank you. Aaron, do you want to answer?
I'm not going to rock the flat top ever. But yeah, the goal is to, the goal actually is for me to be autonomous. I'd like to, my dream is to run the clothing company and definitely get as much market share in the volleyball market as well, but have something that could cross over and, you could go to the gym and see guys wearing autonomous gear, but maybe through that on the back end, that could start pulling them over to volleyball too, so it could work both ways. Ideally, it'd be awesome to get involved in the club world. We have to expand our product line a little bit to include like the full club kit, and then college teams too. But I just want to be something that people look at and say, that's awesome stuff. It's comfortable and it works well. And I want to wear it. I want to wear it when I'm watching TV, and I want to wear it when I'm in the gym doing squat thrusts.
I think Barney makes a good point when he said Steve Timmons and Red Sand. The goal, and you hit it on the head, is to cross over. You want guys in the NBA wearing your shorts when they're working out, surfers, regular people. Seems like that's kind of what you want. Beachy Puma.
Yeah. My vision is to have a campus, like Nike has their campus where they do R&D and they have all this great production and everything, and they can get everything. I'd love to have a campus like that in the South Bay where, people come to see an autonomous town, and they come and they play volleyball or they run track or they do testing and see what their vertical is, see how far they can jump their motorbike.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
God, you knew the way to Barney's heart.
Yeah. Well, Barney, I can't believe he doesn't have any Rockstar gear, actually.
Yeah, I have one pair of six-man shorts from the Rockstar, although my son has a brand-new helmet that's a Rockstar helmet. He was down with that.
Yeah, that's the market they go for. But it'd be nice to be – I just want to be a cool company, really. That's why we're on Swell.com, which is a surf brand place. They sell all the number one surf brands, and we're on there, which is great. And it'd be good to expand all those markets. I want to be in a Dick's Sporting Goods and in a Spider Surf or something like that, something that's completely crossed over and can get market share in every market. Obviously, that's best business-wise.
Is that the next step?
Yeah, we are working on getting a sales rep and then getting out there. I think we'll be able to partner with Spider most likely, and then just getting out there and getting it to more people. Because I have to say right now, we launched last week, and we created a commercial and stuff, and we haven't gotten that much out there, but there's been amazing support from the volleyball community. So I want to thank everybody out there that's gone to Swell and picked up a pair of shorts, and I hope everyone likes them. And if they have any questions or their size is missing, they can get a hold of me at info@autonomoususa.com. But yeah, we need to get out to a broader base, because you can't sell to people that don't know about it.
Yeah, you know, Josh Glazebrook just put your commercial up on our chat board.
Yeah, his company, Relativity 2 Media, we shot for a day and put together what I think is an amazing commercial. So if people want to check that out, you kind of get an idea of what the brand's all about in a quick 2-minute shot.
Good stuff, buddy. Are Phil and Todd still wearing your gear?
I talked to Phil, and I talked to Todd. I haven't talked to Phil yet, and I'm not sure what Todd is going to do yet, but I would love to have him wear it again. Obviously, they're great brand ambassadors, and they're the number one team in the sport, so any association with them is good.
Obviously, if they're not wearing it, it's because they got an apparel deal.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we obviously don't have a huge marketing budget, so you know, if they come to me and say, hey, we got a deal where we're getting paid a lot, we'll be like, that's awesome. That's good for you, and that's good for volleyball. And thanks for the support last year.
Yeah, Kevin Barnett actually definitely wants to know about the friends and family rate.
don't email me. One thing I wanted to say also, though, about the shorts is we were talking about the waistband for a second, but all the drawstrings are light blue. And that's to symbolize our partnership with Athletes for a Cure. I wanted to do something also where I could give back. So light blue is the color for prostate cancer. So we partner with Prostate Cancer Foundation, and we donate a portion of our profits to fund cancer research through Athletes for a Cure. So every tie on the shorts is light blue. So something unique, kind of a little signature thing, and that helps us give back too.
Is prostate cancer something that's touched your life?
No, not. In any other way that I'm a man, and it's something that people need to know about. Like, 1 in 6 men in America will be diagnosed with prostate cancer, which is something I didn't know until I met with them. And, you know, I think there's a million good causes out there, but I wanted to find something that was specific to men right now, since we make a men's product, and the tie-in with Athletes for a Cure is a great one as well.
All right, Aaron, give us the places where your product is available one last time before we let you go.
So you can go to www.swell.com. And we're on there. They actually created a performance geared tab for kind of like the new genre of short that we've created. But if you just want to go straight to the brand, you can do /autonomous. And we have a Facebook page, facebook.com/autonomoususa. And then our info email is info@autonomoususa.com. And I always answer the emails, Aaron and the Autonomous crew, but the crew's tight right now, so it's a direct line to me, pretty much.
We understand. We know how it works.
You and your wife?
Yeah, we don't have a full staff.
Aaron, thanks so much for joining us here on the Net Live. We wish you the best. Look forward to hearing more and more about your success with Autonomous.
Yeah, thanks for having me. We're trying to go represent U.S. and North Seikas in a couple weeks, so I'll report back.
All right, Aaron.
Cool.
Thanks,
Aaron,
brother.
Wachfogel.
Thanks, guys.
All right, Aaron Wachfogel, Autonomous USA.
I love my little buddy. I remember when he won Jeremy over in his younger days when he used to act a fool. I flat out did not like him, and I told him that, too. I like him a lot now. But
Like him a lot, too. I hated him from Six Man a couple of years ago when he did the win in sprint. Yeah, I just didn't
care. That was my fault.
No, I'm checking out his stuff right now, looking at it. I like the way it looks. And he's talking about the functionality, and I get what he's saying about the board shorts and the limitation of board shorts when it comes to doing anything except surfing, and in some cases, board shorts, even for surfing, it's like you can't get your legs far enough apart.
I got a couple pairs of the shorts and a couple of the T-shirts. They're really, really comfortable. But what I want people to know is that Aaron has put a ton of time into this. This wasn't like he just popped up overnight and said, hey, I'm starting a clothing line. I mean, hours and hours and hours of testing material and trying out shorts, not liking this, liking that. I mean, it's really cool. You talk about putting some time into it and really going for it. I mean, he had a vision, and he's getting after it. I'm proud of him.
I love it. Next generation activewear.
I love Beachy Puma. You liked it, too. We both perked up at the same time.
That's, you should put that up there. You know, yeah. That'd be the Beachy Puma.
Even Reed liked it, even though he's having a bad day.
He is having a rough day. Well, hey, we have another friend of the show calling in, Geeter, to talk about something you love to talk about.
What's that?
Juniors volleyball.
Let me guess. My good friend Ojan.
That's correct. He defeated you, and so now he's going
to go. Ojan, let me just go before Ojan goes. Ojan, we had a mandatory SoCal tournament this past weekend. We lost in the finals to Ojan. They deserved it. I thought we got him out of system a ton, as I was saying to you earlier, Barney, but they just found a way to win. He's got a great team, a deep team, and I'm going to suck on this one.
Winning through superior coaching.
Yeah, he out-coached us, beat us, sandbagged us, told us he's not that good, but he is. And Ojan, welcome to the show. Congratulations on taking down the Shack on Saturday in the finals.
That's not really what I'm calling about, but Geeter Squad nicked the only undefeated team in the country, Rancho Valley, in the semis. So that's probably the bigger story for the weekend in the Southern California region.
You guys like each other.
Well, I got to say, Rancho Valley, and Barney, I know you don't care about anything juniors, but they were undefeated. The last time we beat them was in January at a tournament that didn't count, that only I count. And it was, and they'd gone undefeated throughout the year in the mandatories, in Vegas. What a run Danny Scott and Rancho have been on with Krista Van Zandt, and to beat him in one game and at least give him a loss, it was a good moment for the rest of us, because if they would have won this one, Ojan, I don't know if any of us would have had the confidence to move on.
Well, it's a huge story because all the chatter is, will Rancho ever lose this year? I mean, no matter who they come across. So the win in the semis was a big deal. I think it was big for the Shack kids. And speaking to Danny Scott, who's probably my best friend in the world, best man at my wedding, I think he felt, it was a good time to get a nick. When all it takes is a 1-25 point defeat to put an L in the loss column,
yep.
My feeling is that he'd probably rather get it out of the way, because the matches that come next week are of much greater significance. So
yeah, Ojan, let me know. Next thing. What about next weekend? You got the SoCal qualifier. Talk about just how hard it is to qualify at that event and just the depth of the tournament.
The Southern California region is the toughest in the country. I mean, the last 3 years, 12 teams have projected into the Opens at the Junior Olympics. That's basically a third or a fourth of every pool comes out. Every Junior Olympic pool comes out of our region. There are three teams that are coming into SoCal next weekend that have already bidded. And for Barney, if you don't understand the landscape of junior volleyball, internationally, when you qualify, you stop going to qualification tournaments. That's not the case in juniors. Junior teams do it to bolster their seeding, continue their college recruiting exposure, and they do it to sharpen their game for the end of the year. So teams that qualify, continue to play in qualification tournaments because they want to see competition early and often and get a diversity of opponents. So three teams have already qualified as of last weekend. None of the conventional wisdom thinks that those three teams that have already won or finished to bidded positions will actually repeat in bidded positions this weekend. That's how tough this tournament is next weekend.
And we're the 10 seed. I don't know how that's possible. We are the 10 seed. You are much higher than that.
No, it's early on, and losses that happen early in the season still get carried with you. It'll eventually work itself out. And a squad as good as Shaq, is going to overcome its seed, and we all know that.
Well, buddy, good luck this weekend. I'm going to see you. We'll talk after this weekend. SoCal qualifier going on at the American Sports Center on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Going to be an unbelievable event. All you volleyball fans, make sure you get out there. Check out Coast vs. Shaq when it really matters.
Have a good one.
All right, Osh.
Later. There you go.
Can't believe he didn't brag on taking us down.
Should have said something. He's so deferential to you. I mean, where's the rivalry? Where's the fight between you two? I mean, I want to see some of that.
Well, they kind of took it to us.
They just love it. I mean, oh, yeah, he's great. We're great. Everybody's great.
Kind of took it to us.
Remember, not everybody's great.
He took the high road for you. He took the high road.
Well, he's smart. He knows that I'm going to turn around and tell my girls, Ojan was talking smack on the radio. Ojan's doing this. I'm going to fire my girls up. He played it right. He's too smart.
If you want to get in the discussion at any time on this show, 347-677-1525. Another guy who wants to get in on the discussion. He's been wanting to get back in on the discussion. We never know quite what he's going to say.
We cut him last week.
Yeah.
He was not happy.
Matt Boyce, once
gentlemen.
Again, to the program.
Hi, Matt.
What kind of crazy crossover do you have for us this week?
Well, I want to go back real quickly and talk about losing NCAA championships. It seems like only yesterday that we beat UCLA in five, and instead of running to my girlfriend, my mother or father, I ran up to Geeter and Matt Unger and gave them a hug, and they looked at me like, God, please do this for us. We don't have to go through it again. And we went to Hawaii and just got crushed.
Remember that, Matt? Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Matt,
it
remember
was 1998 at Stan Sheriff, but a five-day trip to Hawaii was very nice. And trying George Romaine trying to flush his silver NCAA trophy down the toilet was just hilarious.
It was an ugly match. I had high hopes for that. Watched it from my old college house. Happened to be in town that following year and all pumped up to watch, and it was not a good match.
True story, though. They win. They beat UCLA in the regional final to go into the Final Four. He runs straight into the crowd, hugs us, and said, we're going to the show. That's what I remember about a young Matt Boyce. And he went to the show and pissed his pants. They lost.
And failed. So today's topic is going to be about the portability of the sport. I put that on the back burner on simmer for 7 days. Sorry. That I wasn't good enough to make it back-to-back last week. Okay. And you just had better content. That's what it came down to. I want to talk about the portability of the sport. I think it was on Twitter that I read Ty Loomis saying something about he and Ty Trambley were headed to the Costa Rica Holiday Inn somewhere on spring break to take on a group of spring breakers 2-on-6. And no matter what's going on with the professional beach volleyball tour or lack thereof, there's always something in this sport that is noteworthy that you can take to whether it's Nicaragua or spring break.
Wait,
or,
where?
Did I break up there? Nicaragua. you think about this. When a group of people is on spring break, you don't have 11 people that are like, hey, Skip, why don't you play offensive tackle? Johnny, you're going to be tight end. Rick, fullback. Peter, why don't you do lines? You had a rough night last night. You can't do it with any other sport or even water polo. What, are we going to get some sticky kid hats and go find a pool? It's not going to happen. Volleyball, you can just raise a badminton net. Or a tennis net, or whatever you need. Take the bladder out of a basketball. Got yourself a game.
Originally.
So I think portability is key with the sport. And even kind of a plus-size older kid like myself can still get involved on a Wednesday night.
It's true. You don't see people out there playing a lot of football necessarily, as much as volleyball.
Kind of good on the message board said, who is on right now? Matt, you want to give yourself a introduction since Danny kind of doesn't know who you are, apparently?
Sure, sure. Started out at 14. All my cousins, the Wits, played volleyball and excelled at the sport. I thought it would be a good idea to try to do it too. They got their genes and athleticism from a different side of the family. So long story short, basically defensively and vocally, I worked my way into the college scene, and here I am today, calling into the Net Live every other week.
Andy Witt might have been able to hit a ball pretty hard on the left-hand side, but he couldn't out-talk Matt Boyce.
Could he get on the radio for 7 minutes and dominate like Boyce?
No.
Doubtful.
Maybe two. Boyce is at least three times.
How do the conversations at Thanksgiving around the dinner table go in the Witt household?
Well, there was a period of time where George Romaine was living with them, playing at San Ynez High School. And so you basically had Andy, Larry, George, occasionally Taliaferro would show up because he had family up there. And, you know, you'd just sit down there and listen to them talk about playing internationally, trophies, winning, playing in the front row, things that I could never relate to. But it was always fun to kind of sit back in the woodworks and dream and never really get there. And I think probably at 22, I finally said, okay.
It's over.
Yeah, well, something else is beginning.
Something else is beginning. Now, real quick, people on the message board want you to do a Marv Dunphy impression.
Here we go.
Barnett would appreciate that.
There we go. Everyone's
well.
Got.
Now, I want to tell you, I respect the hell out of Marv, and I also do an amazing impression of Marv. And I will do – I walked up to Karch when I did the women's match down in San Juan Capo a couple weeks ago, and I walked up to him, and my favorite one is he puts his hand on your shoulder and he says, you know what? About a shoulder like that, I'd still be playing. Hey, Rick. My favorite one. And I still can get McLaughlin to this day at JO's. He'll be scouting at a court like three courts away, and I'll just give it a barrel, just a barreler. Hey, Rick. And he'll turn right around and just look at me like, Boyce, you again.
Everyone who's played for Dunphy knows all about doing a Dunphy impression.
Coastal Eddie.
Oh, good time, Charlie.
Coastal Eddie killing those East Coast guys getting killed out here. All right, Matt Boyce, thanks again for contributing.
All right, Chance, have a good one.
Boyce, we got Sprague coming on later. He was nervous to call in after you, so make sure you listen.
Rightfully so, but he gave him my first shot, so I'm going to let him go.
Attaboy. Thanks, Matt.
See you guys.
All right, Matt Boyce. You never know what he's going to do.
That's the beauty of it.
Unpredictable.
I mean, he goes from like Ty Loomis playing against six people in some Cancun or something. Panama City. Segues
right.
Into whatever you need.
Hey,
the amazing thing about the kid.
Connect with us all week on Facebook, facebook.com/thenetlive. You can answer topics like what's a struggling beach player to do this year? It's one of the topics we had out there this year. Gita, there were five choices. Don't know if you saw them. Number one was play all three tours and make it work. Number two, quit and start an apparel company. You know, somebody's done that. Number three, quit and work at Walmart, making the same money as option number one. Number four, embark on a coaching career. Or five, start his or her own tour. Jason Ring piped up that he was going to start his own tour called the J Ring Tour.
All
Oregon.
All buff guys.
Super buff. At the bench, at least 300 to be on the tour. But we have topics out there. There were lots of funny answers. Marco Sandoval threw out their sixth option, which was start your own radio show.
Everyone thinks they can do it.
Everybody can.
All you got to do is do it.
All right, I want to get to this Doug Beal audio. It's about 6 minutes long. It's about the Hugh McCutchen situation and balancing what you want to do with Hugh McCutchen. You know, he's looking to move out of the national team into this other job in Minnesota, and he had to go to his boss and talk with Hugh or talk with Doug about that. And I started out with, hey, what was your goal in dealing with Hugh and this offer from Minnesota and making that transition possible? So this is Doug Beal a couple weeks ago talking about Hugh McCutchen.
Well, our goal was to do everything we can to keep him with our team through the London game. So we're delighted that we were able to work that out. And I have to say that the University of Minnesota was incredibly cooperative and just wonderful through the whole process. We recognized, immediately that this is a wonderful job opportunity for Hugh because of his very unique family situation. And so I think we were quite prepared for Minnesota to make him this offer and for him to be attracted to it and ultimately accept. It's certainly going to be a challenge. I think it's going to require Hugh to walk a very fine line and to sort of ignore the situation going on at Minnesota to a certain degree. I certainly expect, and he and I have talked quite a lot about this, that he'll be checking in and be aware of how the program operates for about a year and a half. But I think Hugh is very focused on our team and the direction that they've gone. I think he's put together a terrific staff. The team has achieved at a wonderfully high level very early in this quad.
Right.
we have, you know, we have great expectations. I think the talent is pretty exceptional, and you know, I don't want to overburden him with these unrealistic expectations, but he's just done a terrific job up to this point, and we're, you know, we're just pleased as we can be that he's able to continue, and I think his staff is, and I think the players feel the same way.
When does the search for his replacement begin?
That's a good question. Probably before the Olympics, particularly given the certainty of where Hugh's going to be going, and so we don't have to deal with, you know, is he going to renew or what's the issue with him? Given the normal international schedule right now, we certainly have some time after the Olympics to make that decision about our women's team or either of our indoor teams.
We had more of a broad question about the national team jobs, and is it really a sought-after commodity to be the national team coach?
that's a great question. Yeah, I think it is. If the number of applications that I get or letters or emails of inquiry is any indication, yes, every time it's been made aware to people that we're looking for a coach. I don't think I'd say I get flooded, but I receive lots of letters and emails of inquiry and interest. So, yeah, I think it is a very sought after job, not only by coaches in this country, but throughout the world. I think lots of people understand the potential of our sport, the quality of the athletes in our country, and are enormously attracted to working with the USA national team program. So I'm delighted to be able to report that. You know, having said that, the growth of the profession, certainly on the women's side, but also on the men's side collegiately, you know, to a certain degree makes it a challenge to try to identify one of those coaches and sort of woo them away from their very secure environment. I think that's, you know, that's a great thing, frankly, because the profession has afforded the growth of the population of coaches in our country to a wonderful level. We have lots of really, really outstanding coaches here.
Yeah, that was one of the things when you look at who's qualified or not. There are a lot of applicants, but certainly a lot of the people who you look at as the best coaches, both on the men's and women's side, do occupy some of those top spots in universities, which are very secure, very stable. They have a certain set of demands, and it seems like the national team has increased demands and also increased instability with that job. And I just wonder how you go about wooing someone out of a Nebraska, a Texas, a USC, a Pepperdine for men's and women's side. How do you do that? How do you get those people back into the international game or into the international game for the first time?
I think there's two ways to answer that. One is, you know, you put together a compensation package that's competitive, but you also attract them by the challenge of the job and the level that they're working at. And, you know, at least up to this point, we've been able to do that, I think. The second part of that is I'm not so sure that we don't need to always rethink or reevaluate what we ask of our national team staffs. I'm looking at basketball, for example, as a model. You know, they don't hire year-round full-time coaches, and they get the very best that the country has to offer, whether they come from the NBA or they come from the college ranks. And maybe that's a model that we could look at going toward, that we don't necessarily have to have our head coach year-round, but could be, you know, could be successful coaching during the summer, which might work for a lot of college coaches, and then maybe 1 year full after that, or the Olympic year, or something. I don't know, but it's certainly
interesting.
It's a model that we might want to look at, you know, post London.
Doug Beal, a couple weeks ago, sitting up chatting
interesting
with him.
Take there at the end. You actually said interesting.
That's the most
I've never heard anybody say that.
Interesting thing I think I've heard Doug say in a long time is that possibility of doing that. That's something the players have talked about for a long time, more in a negative light, because we go overseas and play for 6 or 8 months, and you, because otherwise you don't get paid if you stay home.
Sure.
Even if you're in practice, you get paid some lesser amount, and the coach is there collecting a paycheck, and you're wondering, what are you doing? Aside from some planning, but then they started coaching up these other guys and bringing other people in the gym, but they're not of any value, really. It's an interesting thing to hear Doug actually say, maybe we don't need a full-time coach. That said, I don't know that you can have a full-time college coach come in and run the national team, because they have duties over the summer. Camps. One of the big income drivers for those
both programs, the college and the national team, better have strong assistants, because they're going to be doing a lot of the workload.
You're not going to get rid of your full-time staff entirely. And I just wonder if you can get a John Cook, a Jared Elliott, a Marv Dunphy, some of the other high
without
value
having
coaches.
Jimmy Mack, without having to leave Washington, he can come and coach the team. Yeah, I guess.
John Spraw. I don't know that can happen. It's an interesting idea, but when you start to think about the logistics, it's a big problem. And the problem with these jobs is that you look at a John Spraw. He's been in the UC system for nearly 20 years now as an assistant and as a head. UCLA, UC Irvine. There's a tremendous amount of incentive for him to stay. Pension, pay, insurance, all guaranteed. How can you get that guy, who I think would be a great head coach for the men's side of the game, how can you get that guy to leave that position? Alan Knipe has a rather unique situation where he was allowed to have a leave of absence and can return. Marv Dunphy did that years ago with Pepperdine, where he took a leave of absence and returned with that guarantee of return. But you can't always get an organization to guarantee that return. Could John Spraw do it in the summer? Question for him in a little bit.
20 minutes.
He's coming up. We're also going to have the College Volleyball Weekly. We'd be remiss if we didn't mention Zamps, big sponsor of the show, orthosis for athletes, not just for when you're hurt. This is stuff to prevent injury. They're all about injury prevention. Terrific high-quality products, knees, elbows, ankles, backs, anything you need. My back feels great after wearing a Zamps back brace yesterday, flying around Pala Raceway. Zamps, orthosis for athletes. Check it out, Zamps.com, Z-A-M-S-T. Going to break. Net Live, right back. We're going to have College Volleyball Weekly. We're going to have John Spraw. I don't know. Greatest of all time is an interesting debate. I'm looking at something here on somebody posted on our Facebook wall about Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan. It's not even close, by the way.
Were they asking who's better?
Who's the greatest? They have the stats run down the sides.
Not even interesting.
Not even close. Kobe is not in Michael's air.
He's in the conversation.
No.
Yep.
He isn't.
Yep.
Be right back. The Net Live, volleyballnetwork.com.
There's a fire starting in my heart, reaching a fever pitch, just bringing me out the dark. Finally, I can see you crystal clear. Go ahead and sell me out, and I'll lay your ship bare. I
Net Live on the volleyballnetwork.com. Welcome back. Been an interesting show so far. Aaron Wachvogel joined us. Talk about Autonomous, his new clothing line. Check that out. Swell.com. They're selling out quick. Good reviews from our folks that have ordered them on our Facebook page. Talked to Matt Boyce, called in with his usual brand of craziness. Ojan, a little bit of juniors. Trying to hit all bases here.
Yeah.
Right before the break, we were talking about the greatest of all time and going down a basketball list between Jordan and Kobe.
Yeah, I was getting an argument with somebody on the message board, too. Just talks out of their butt about Shaq and Kobe and has no idea what they're talking about, so I just can't get into it right now because I'm trying to do the show. But they can email me personally, and we'll go back and forth about it.
Bottom line, Kobe.
It's just funny when people go, Shaq won all those titles, when they forget about Shaq fouling out in game 5 against Indiana in 2000. They forget about Kobe in the San Antonio series in 2002. Any Laker will tell you, because I've asked them, anybody who follows the team will tell you closely that in those days, Kobe was just as important as Shaq. Shaq was the most dominant big man at that era. There's no question. Kobe was dominant that time. It's a team sport.
You cannot win.
You gotta be crazy.
In the NBA.
Yeah, you can't win.
With less than 2 All-Stars. You probably need 3.
Absolutely.
But unless you have at least 2, you don't have a chance. Duncan Robinson. Duncan Parker Ginobili. Count that for later.
Rodman, Pippen, Jordan. No question.
Olajuwon, Drexler.
Bird, Parrish.
McHale.
Dennis Johnson. Jordan, Danny Ainge.
Jordan and Pippen are the two between those 6 championships. The only 2 same players.
Yeah.
But they had all those other role players. You go to John Paxton, shoot the lights out. Craig Hodges is his equal.
If you could do it by yourself, LeBron would have done it with Cleveland that year.
If he can't do it by himself, nobody can.
Yeah, that LeBron got them to 60 wins. As much as I don't like LeBron, that he got them to 60 wins 2 years in a row with that team is pretty incredible.
Now, in the sport of volleyball, you see the same thing. You see teams that have great opposites, and you think, boy, that opposite is unbelievable. But really, when it comes down to winning a match, especially a good match against a good opponent in a pressure situation or a long tournament like the Olympics, like the World Championships, you cannot rely on one player. You have to have at least 2 good players, probably 3 in the sport of volleyball. Same equation. You have to have an outside hitter and an opposite who can both play at a high level. And you probably need a middle, at least one who can play at a high level. One of the things the 08 team did on the men's side was they were a team in the truest sense of a team. They had great performance from Clay Stanley, no doubt. But everybody on that roster at times picked it up. Riley Salomon dominates in, I think it's the Russia match. He has an awesome match from the net where he's typically not the guy, but he's getting sets in crunch time. And you have to have that kind of balance. I used to believe, because I was an outside hitter and an opposite, that you didn't need middles. Middles, they're just there a distraction so I can get a better blocking matchup. I tell you what, the 08 team taught me forever that having great middles is a huge benefit.
Without a
huge.
Doubt.
Huge. And we're not even talking about blocking. We're talking about offensively.
No question.
Oh, my God. To have a middle that can put the ball away from 8 to 10 feet off the net and the ball is not passed well was so important for that group. And both David Lee and Ryan Millar did a tremendous job in that role, being an offensive threat, opening it up for Reed Pretty, opening it up for Clay Stanley. And Clay Stanley gets the accolades, but certainly what was going on in the middle made Clay's job easier because Clay does not hit a very fast set. You can't really make a great matchup for Clay on a normal play. But if you can stall with the middle, the slower set to Clay works.
There's no question that at any level, whether it's juniors, college, international, offensively, when you have great middles, offensively, at any of those levels, you're going to win a lot of games. It does so much. You know, I have a great pin hitter in Jane Croson. People will release to her all day long. And this is lower level. We're talking club. This is international men. This isn't, you know, college at the highest level. But people smart enough to go, hey, they're going to set her. We're releasing. But if you can have even a decent middle at that level, that can put balls away and honor those middle blockers and free Jane up, then you're going to win a lot of games. I mean, you need to have good middles if you're going to win gold medals. You're going to win national championships. No question about it.
I think volleyball is one of the ultimate team sports because it takes so much to make a good play. You look at basketball, soccer, football's pretty close, pretty comparable. American football.
No question. You know, to go on, when we're talking about basketball, you look at this Laker team with the Kobe, Lamar, and Pau Gasol, definitely the three best players, right? But without Andrew Bynum, healthy, and doing what he does, affecting the game on the defense side, getting 10 to 15 rebounds a game over these last three, 4 weeks, that makes them 15-1 over the last 16 games. Without him, they were a different team. They struggled for those two games. They did not look the same. It's a team sport. It's hard to say, well, this guy won, you know, those are Jordan's rings. Those are Shaq's rings. They're everybody on that team. You don't think Ori shot against Sacramento in game four was you and I were on the stage together. A dog piled you.
Yes.
I mean, you don't think that was big? You know, you don't win without him. D. Fish has five rings. Those are his rings, too.
Oh, D. Fish is just clutch. He's that John Paxton guy. He's that.
Ron Harper was a major part of the Bulls teams that you loved. Harper was big in those days, without a doubt.
You have to have those people that understand their role. They're not going to get all the publicity. They're not going to be the face of the franchise, but they're no less important to what's happening. You have to get people to buy in, and that's the genius of coaching we talk about with a Phil Jackson, with a Hugh McCutchen. You get them to buy in to the team. Not the team concept's too, I don't know, PC or too overused, team concept. Get them to buy into what the team is hoping to achieve and what your role inside of that is. And that's the key, is what is your personal role? Are you willing to accept it? Are you willing to work towards that? Rather than, I want the attention for me. I want to be the star. I want to be... And you see that so much in athletes that don't have the ability to be the star for one reason or another, whether on the court or the way they look or the way they act, personality-wise, whatever. They don't have it, but they still want it, and they're unwilling to let go of that in favor of what they really can do to benefit the team.
A true star player can carry your team through some rough times, rough patches during a match in volleyball, during a game in hoops. They lead you in a lot of ways that maybe – the viewer doesn't know, whether it's in practice, whether it's getting your team ready to play. A real star player, that's where their value comes through. Kemba Walker has been incredible for UConn in this tournament, and he's the talk, but their other guard, Lamb, scoring 30 against San Diego State is a reason why they also won that game. But your star can take you, and you said this in the break, I think, can take you to another level. That's why Jordan, what he did for the whole game, the culture of the game and his team, the will to win at all times makes him the greatest of all time. But in volleyball, you have to have your star players, and they got to play at a high level. But everyone else working with them matters. And you're not winning anything unless everyone's on the same page, anything of significance, I should say, unless everyone's on the same page, putting in the same time, the same work, and everyone has to play the role. Lamborn has to cover, right? He's got to dig balls. He's got to pass. He's not attacking, but that gold is just as much his as it is Reed's, and Reed will tell you that too, right?
Absolutely.
You know who I was sorry to see go from the Lakers 2 years ago was Trevor Ariza. And I thought that their run through the, what was that, final series, without a few of the plays he made down the stretch, they might not even win.
No doubt, Reed. And that made him a lot of money. I mean, he became a guy that was like, wow, Ariza is maybe going to be an all-star one day. If he looked at his age, his athleticism, his length, his ability to like slash, he made unbelievable plays. And he had his best shooting streak in the NBA Finals. And if you're going to have it then, that everyone's going to want you, and that's why he was a sought-after guy.
You know who that reminds me of, volleyball-wise? Kevin, you'll appreciate this, and we might have even mentioned it on the show before, but when we were trying to qualify, I think it was for the 2004 Olympics in Puerto Rico, we're playing Cuba, and actually Juan Torrena was on the Cuban team at that time. And, I mean, we're in the fifth set, and Dave McKenzie subs in, and he has a serve and a dig and a cover. Without those three plays, we might not have even gone to those games.
Isn't that amazing? You can remember those kind of things as a player and a coach. And that's what the people that are just watching and parents, and they don't know that. They don't see it.
No, McKenzie never doesn't end up going to the Olympics. McKenzie on that qualifying team makes important plays for that to happen, doesn't end up going to
the
Olympics.
Isn't that amazing?
But he's no less a part of what happened. And that's
absolutely
what people forget, too, is with the Olympic Games, 12 guys go. There's 20 in the gym, 22 in the gym. There's 8, 10 more guys that are responsible for that. One of the reasons I said I claimed my European championship with Machirata. I went home a week early with a knee injury, but believe me, I made some plays in that
still yours
qualification that without me, putting an ace on Friedrichshafen, we don't go anywhere.
You know,
and
that, yeah.
It's so important for everyone to understand on the team the role of those guys.
Yeah.
And that those guys are not less important than the rest. And that was always one of the things Hugh preached, is that we are all important. We are all here working towards a common goal. And we get back to talking about respecting or liking your teammates. You don't have to like them. You have to respect them and what they're doing to further your goals and their own.
And that's what I'm always trying to preach to kids. And read, I've seen like YouTube videos of when you guys won the gold medal, and there's this one of all you guys on the floor, and it goes on for a long time. But when you're hugging guys on the team that didn't sniff in that match or much in the Olympics, they're still a huge part of it. You guys are winning. You guys won together. That's your teammate. There's no, you don't separate,
no question. That.
You don't separate who was the star and who at that moment. You don't, right?
No, not at all. Through the whole process, I think once you get that buy-in, then everybody involved in the gym is making the same commitment, the same sacrifices, and he would always say, we're in this together. We're all in this together, and it's true. And you can't succeed without that mindset.
Billy Ferguson's USC Trojans continue to get it done. Speaking of a team that's power and playing together.
They're playing their roles
all season. Murphy Troy and the men of Troy taking care of it. The Net Live, in association with the American Volleyball Coaches Association, presents each week the College Volleyball Weekly. We should just start calling it the Trojan Volleyball Weekly, really, at this point. We have our correspondents on the line. We've got Sondheimer. We've got Hossick. I don't know where Rob on the mic is this week. Trying to get them up. There we go.
We have all three?
I have two.
Hello.
And Mike.
Hi, Mike. I'm here.
Let's go.
How are you here? How are you guys doing?
We're good. We're good. Mike, we know you've been busy with the NCAA tournament with the men's and women's basketball teams from UCLA. We appreciate you joining us here on the show.
And great. I got to at least see the last event in Pauley Pavilion. I got back in time to see UCLA and Irvine, the last event ever in Pauley Pavilion before it gets remodeled. And MPSF is going to be wild finish for second and for fourth.
Yeah, so UCLA defeats UC Irvine 3-0 in what had to be, I don't know, is that unexpected, Mike, or is that you think that's a toss-up each time they play?
I think it was totally unexpected to be in three, but I've never seen Irvine play as poorly as they did, especially in the big points. I mean, they were really off their game, and UCLA played really, really well. The Bruins have won seven straight now, and Al Skates has got the younger players playing really well right now. And it was surprising to be three, but it was typical, and Al got in the PA afterwards and thanked everybody. It was probably 20 or 30 ex-UCLA players that came back for the last event, and it was pretty exciting for the last event.
Jay, can we finally put to bed the notion that Ohio State deserves a number?
Well, I will put to bed that notion if Sondy will agree that hitting 230 and winning a match is not exactly playing outstanding. So we'll go that way. But
definitely, I agree. There's no question about it.
For the listeners at home, Ohio State came out here to California, lost to UC San Diego 3-1.
Yep.
That's the dominant power, UC San Diego. And UC Irvine 3-0. So my vote this week, since I'm going to get one, is going to UC San Diego for first place.
Well, San Diego lost in three to UCLA the next night. Two nights.
Yeah,
later.
No. Listen, I'm sure it's not a secret. I mean, you know, Ohio State went out there and you know San Diego played a fine match, and you know I don't think Ohio State was on 100%. That doesn't mean anything. So don't anybody write me any hate mail. You know, I tell you what. When it comes down to the playoff finals or when it comes down to the Final Four, if they make it, I can guarantee you no coach is going to want to see them. I'm telling you they're good. And I know that you're going to say opposite because of the weekend. You know what? You could say that about a lot of teams out there right now. Everybody has lost a match that maybe they thought they weren't supposed to. So, are they number one? I wouldn't put them there right now. I don't think anybody would. But I definitely think they're going to be in the finals or Final Four, and I think that's going to be somebody that nobody wants to see.
Well, what Ohio State did do, one thing you need to say is that they lost the chance for an at-large if they lose to Loyola Chicago in the playoffs. I mean, Loyola Chicago, when they were out here, they looked good. I mean, they beat Northridge, they almost beat UCLA, and it's no gimme that Ohio State's going to beat Loyola Chicago in one match at home. And Ohio State, if they'd won out here, might have gotten the at-large over Stanford or BYU or Irvine or somebody, you know, wins second in the MPSF.
That's a possibility, Sondy. You're definitely right about that.
Now, Jay, Arnie Ball got his 500th win. He did not do it against you guys, correct?
No, he did not actually. You know, for those of you that know Arnie, and I know everybody in this radio show does, Arnie is an outstanding guy, an outstanding coach, obviously the father of Loy Ball, who, Kevin, you know very well, and could not have happened to a better guy, and I'm sure he would agree that, you know, it's been his players over the years that have helped him get there. But congratulations to Arnie Ball. He did win his 500th match against Carthage in 3-0, and they unfortunately lost to Loyola the night before. But, yeah, Arnie did he's doing a nice job out there. You know, they deservedly got that for their coach.
Now, I know Robbie on the mic has joined us. Robbie, Long Beach State getting back on track. There were some concerns about them. They had not been playing well, got swept at home by Hawaii. They go on the road, beat UOP, and bigger than that, beat Stanford.
Yeah, you know, I think last week I made a comment about the disappearance of Antoine Aguilar. I think he heard me or something, because he came out and as a middle ended up getting 27 kills that night. And they started their freshman center, Connor Albright. So my guess is they're getting it redialed back in after his strong start in the beginning of the season, because at one point Long Beach State was ranked number 2 and they had a big drop off, and maybe they're going to make that run right now.
Sunday we have UCI versus UCLA coming up this week, I believe. Big for both
teams?
Yes.
I think it's big for Irvine, because Irvine played so poorly at UCLA, and Irvine still has a shot at fourth. What UCLA did by beating Irvine in San Diego is all but clinch eighth spot now. So the Bruins should be in the playoffs, and I think it's pretty well the first eight are locked in. But Long Beach has got two big matches at BYU this week. Hawaii's got two at home with Northridge this week and two with SC. And Santa Barbara's got Irvine also and San Diego. And all those teams are battling for that fourth spot and being home for the first round of MPSF.
You do not want to be in that 8 spot, that 7 spot, and you're having to open at SC or possibly go to Stanford or BYU and not even getting invited to those, you know, Final Four teams that's going to be at Galen Center.
Yeah. I mean, SC basically is in now. Now that Stanford lost that match to Long Beach, I mean, USC's got a 3.5-game lead with 6 to go, and I can't see any way anybody's going to catch USC. So the Trojans have a chance to be home for the playoffs.
And, Jay, isn't it kind of amazing in our sport, you think about this, it's not even April yet, really, and SC is basically in the Final Four, are they not?
You know, that's a good point to make, Peter.
I think
regardless of how they – I mean, if they lose in the first round, I think it becomes a question mark at that time. However, I think because of their results throughout the season and their rankings and the polls and how everybody feels, I think they will get the at-large bid if they get past at least the first round. So I'd say they're in the Final Four. It's a pretty good bet. That's pretty much what we're thinking. So, yeah, good statement.
Well, that happened to Irvine in 2006. You know, they dominated the conference and ended up losing in the semifinal match to Long Beach State. They got the at-large bid. So, I mean, USC's in. That's a given.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Hey, Jay, how good would you look in some of Aaron's autonomous gear?
Look
at that city in Happy Valley.
You know what? I would gladly wear some of that stuff. Aaron, if you're still listening, go ahead and send some stuff out here. I'll be your Penn State rep and get that stuff going. You know what it kind of reminds me of is some plastic gear from years ago.
Oh, yeah. Plastic was very popular for quite some time.
Yes, absolutely.
Hey, I pulled out my 1982 Penn State jacket for the first time the East ever scored. I got this windbreaker I found in my closet from 30 years ago.
Awesome.
Blue with Penn State. Awesome. That's historic. I wonder if I can get an autograph by anybody when I go back there in May.
When you come out, we'll see if we can find someone.
Hey, guys, we're going to get to Sprawl here soon, but give us your game of the week for each guy. We'll start with you, Jay.
I got two, actually. If we play George Mason a Saturday, if we take at least one set off them, we will clinch the EIVA Tate, and we'll host the EIVA Championships coming up here in a few weeks. I'm going to call a thriller right now. Pepperdine going up to play UOP. They're going to face a tough Tiger program as of recent, but USC plays Stanford the night before, and I think if they beat Stanford, they're going to go into UOP. I'm making a call right now. UOP takes USC this weekend.
Whoa.
UOP?
Whoa.
I'm making the call.
I'm making the call.
Well, there is some sanity in the world of volleyball, because the new AVCA poll just out, Southern California, USC finally got all 16 first place.
Finally.
SC first, BYU second, Stanford third, Long Beach State fourth, UCLA five, Irvine six, Ohio State seven, UC Santa Barbara eight, Hawaii nine, Loyola Chicago 10.
And we'll
bad week for Ohio State. Ohio State men's basketball, women's basketball, volleyball all losing this week.
Wait, how do we dropped in the polls, yet we won both our matches and we beat Loyola. So they get to go ahead of us and we drop below them. That's awesome work.
Schedule some tougher competition, first
That's
of all.
That's awesome work.
Vote yourself number one. Climb yourself up.
And you guys, claim that the Ohio State getting a number one vote is crazy. I'm just laughing at hearing all these things. These polls crack me up every single week.
Because UCLA won two. They get all the Penn State votes.
Yeah, exactly.
Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you next week.
Great
Take
week.
Care. Bye-bye.
All right. College Volleyball Weekly. New poll out. SC. Man, they are dominating. It's ridiculous. Can anybody stop them? Really?
Yeah, if you're going to beat them, it's going to be in the national championship match. You just got to beat them one time. Whoever gets there is going to have one shot because they're not losing any time before then.
Yeah, I think it's important what you said, that they're going to the final.
They're going.
They're going. It doesn't matter what happens. Yeah. They're going to the final.
We'll ask John about this, but you know that's one thing that's kind of a bummer. That's what I love about March Madness and you know college football. They say, oh, it's the playoff game every single week, and it actually isn't because many times teams lose early in the year, but they're from the SEC conference. They get rewarded and they get in. If you lose at the end of the year, you're out. You know, so it's like there is no playoff system. And in men's volleyball right now, who's getting the at-large bid? If SC loses first round, they're still going to the Final Four.
Unfortunately, such a small sport, you could have a 32-team tournament, and that would be everybody makes the playoffs. That'd be like youth flag football. Then it'd be the comparable for you there, Keeter. Yeah. You're not paying attention anymore.
I am. I'm just on the chat room trying to make this show go.
The Net Live, we'll be right back on the other side. John Spraw, UC Irvine head coach.
Will he ever be the next national team coach? Will we ever be saying that?
2 years from now.
Okay.
2 years from now. They're going to make him an offer he can't refuse. Irvine's going to cooperate. He's on his way. The Net Live, right back. DJ Roche. Put those songs up on iTunes. On Facebook. The Net Live grooving early, 11:35 a.m. here in California. Springtime has sprung, going to be in the mid-80s by the middle of the week. Geeter, you could be out on the beach playing.
I'll be changing diapers.
Or you could be at the hospital.
I'll be at the hospital, buddy. As of 24 hours from now, I will be at Cedars, guaranteed.
You know, we mentioned Arnie Ball. 100%. We mentioned Indiana Purdue Fort Wayne in the last segment, College Bible Weekly, and it just brings to mind one of the news items that was crossing across my information superhighway over the last week, and it's Fort Wayne, Indiana, wanted to name a building after their very influential, famous mayor.
Sure.
And it got voted down. The mayor's name, Hairy Balls, which led to some classic titles, classic headline fun. You know the newspapers were so excited about this. It said, Fort Wayne, Indiana refuses to slap Hairy Balls title on government building.
Here's the thing. There's a couple problems with this name. Just a couple.
It's B-A-A-L-S, first of all.
Number one, the parents got to know better. And number two, if your name is Hairy Balls, you're just never going to have a building or a library or something of significance. Your name is never going to be on the marquee. It's just, your name's Hairy Balls.
Well, he was mayor in the 30s and 50s. Okay.
Yeah.
It's an old-time picture of him. You know that you have to be better if your name's Hairy Balls. You have to be better than everyone else.
You better be a Hall of Famer first ballot.
I would change my name. I don't care. I don't care if I was named after somebody in my family. I would change my name.
Sugar Ray is from
Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Fort Wayne, Indiana.
And don't you think she's going to get heckled for this?
Okay. Jay Roche's lady is going to get abused for this, hopefully.
Oh.
Only there.
I'll Skype her right now.
Yes, because you guys are friends. You really love to let him know that you're friends with his gal.
It's his own fault. He gave me her information. I sort of asked
After last week's dialogue, I don't think you have anything to worry about, J-Ro.
Oh, pretty.
God, I love reading.
You know, you have one off week, and everyone just crushes. You wait till Jen Kessie's in here. It's on. I'm getting a tuxedo T-shirt, and I'm winning
I'm
this.
Telling you guys, if we had audio of when we went off the air, and Reed just goes, Barney, what happened to you?
I'll tell you what it was. It was good
Your
radio.
Game
That's what it was.
Terrible. I mean, it was amazing. It was just the guy was in Russia, so far away from us, in his room, just going, dude, what happened to you? I mean, it was an amazing moment between two friends.
Reed Pretty talking to me about the kind of game someone has. Sheesh. Guy plays guitar well. He thinks that's all he has to do.
You built it up so much over the year. But I will say, if we had any pre-recorded conversation between Kevin and I that would have been gold radio, it was when I was on the 22 driving to the ASC and we had finally connected on Nick Lewin. We were going back and forth for 2 weeks. Right. And I tell you, oh, man, borderline show canceled. It was all time.
Geeter, you were going to take over.
Recently had my year anniversary of the show. Nothing was done about it.
Not even in the open.
Not even in the open.
We'll celebrate.
Hard to take over the show.
We'll celebrate you soon.
I'm still getting Rita.
I can't
Lewin
believe their friendship was tested over Nick Lewin. He's not worth it.
It just shows you we're stronger. It didn't fade away. We're good.
Well, it almost after your game with Kessie, it almost ended there, too. Reed was embarrassed.
I'm coming back stronger. You know, just like Kessie being 0-13 in finals. All right? Look. I'm like the USC Trojans, okay? I've been winning. I've been by winning. I have one bad night, but you know what? I'm guaranteed to be in the playoffs, and I'm going to dominate.
That's true. You have a bye to the finals.
I'm going right to the finals.
That's a good point.
Hey, you don't have to tell that. Sorry. I'm going right to the finals, and I will get this spiky-haired little punk.
Maybe we can ask Spraw about your game.
Yeah, let's bring him into the show.
Give him some good music, Jay,
as opposed to bad music.
Good point.
Just saying.
I mean, he's got a gold medal. He's on the staff in 2008. He's won two national championships.
He's turned Irvine into a contender.
At Irvine. Let me just tell you, when we used to play Irvine, when I was playing college level, I got to play. That's how bad it was. I started against Irvine. Now they have two titles, and it's all because of this man right here. I think he's one of the great coaches in the world. He's a friend of the show, friend of ours, Johnny Spraw.
Gentlemen, how are you?
John.
Thanks for having me on.
You're following Matt Boyce. It better be good.
You know, that was the one thing. Geeter sent me a text this past weekend, asked me if I could be on, and I said, I have only one request. Do not follow Matt Boyce. And sure enough, there he is before me.
Just killing me.
You know, we had a good time on the bench that one year when I had Presh and Boyce and Johnny Hawks as my assistant coaches. We didn't win a lot of matches some of those years, but we laughed a lot.
Hold on. For those of you people out there, the dialogue that must have gone on, Presh, Boyce, Johnny Hawks, where did you even fit in? What did you even say?
I just sat there and laughed. I didn't have to do anything.
Sure, the team was 7-25 that year.
Yeah, I think we were 9-20, but it was a great year for dialogue.
Well, hey, John, this year you had kind of an up-and-down year. You ranked number 6 last week and lost to UCLA in 3, but then came back and defeated Ohio State in 3. So it seems like kind of a microcosm of what's been happening.
I think that's probably true. Although we had been playing some pretty good volleyball. We were 5-2 over the previous month or so, and our only two losses were to Stanford in 5 and to SC in a tight four. And so I thought we were playing some pretty good volleyball. But, yeah, we came out after the finals week break, and we were not very good versus the Bruins. In fact, I tried not to over-dramatize it, but I thought it was maybe one of the worst matches I'd ever been a part of here at Irvine. And I ran into Dean Spittle, who's the dad of the Spittle boys. Paul played for me, and then Nick, and now Anthony's in his fifth year. So every single year I've been here for 9 years, I've had a Spittle on the team. And we had beat Ohio State and had a pretty good match, and we were having a team meal afterwards, and Dean came up to me, and Dean's really competitive. You can see where all the Spittle boys get their competitive fire. And even though we just had a nice win, Dean is still heated about UCLA. And he comes up and he goes, "That was the worst match I've seen since 2002. So I figured when Dean backed me up on that, I figured it probably was true. It was a pretty brutal night.
Points for honesty. Now, what you as a head coach, what do you do? Do you address it immediately, or do you take a little while to collect your thoughts and come back to the guys at the next practice and talk about what happened in that match?
No, I addressed it in the locker room. It was actually, you know, there are times when guys don't work hard and they don't maybe give it their whole effort, and that usually gets me pretty fired up. I walked in that locker room. We were just bad. Everybody decided to play their worst match of the year on the same night, I felt. And, you know, I just asked them, how did that happen? What did you do beforehand? How did you prepare? How did we get in this position? And so I wasn't super upset. I wasn't peeling the paint or anything in the locker room, but I obviously wasn't very happy. So, but we came back, had some good practices, and yeah, I think we'll be better this week.
And, John, if you can give us an honest answer on this one, how disappointing was it? Because remember where you came from. You came from UCLA, such a competitive program where it was all about winning titles, and here you are going back to play against your former coach in the building where you won championships for the last time ever. It's a big game for them not to bring their best or that best effort. How disappointing was that?
Incredibly. I was really fired up to get into that match. I couldn't believe that it worked out that was going to be the last athletics event in Pauley Pavilion, and I was going to have an opportunity to coach in that match. And I was pretty excited about it, talked about it with the team. It seemed like they were into it. I thought that we had some good practices on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. I thought we were ready to go, and we just came out and didn't play well. And I don't know, I wish I had a better explanation for it, but yeah, I was pretty bummed out about it. I wanted to win, and I definitely wanted it to be a great match because I think that's what Pauley Pavilion and its last night deserved. I thought it deserved a great volleyball match, and unfortunately we didn't do our part for that.
Now, you beat the number one team in the nation, Ohio State, according to some of us in our region, three straight. Are you happy with the way you guys responded?
Very much so. We came out, we were much more aggressive, and Ohio State's a very good volleyball team. I think people need to understand that one of their better players, Sean Sangre, had an emergency appendectomy from what I understand from a few weeks ago. So he has been out. He actually played his first match back against us, and he was okay, but he wasn't the same player when we played them at Penn State in February. When he gets back up to 100%, that team is a very, very good volleyball team. So I think they could absolutely give somebody a run for their money in the Final Four. I mean, it's going to be I think you guys are right. I think SC is going to go to the Final Four, and they're going to be the top seed. And there's no debate about that, I don't think. And so then it's going to be between Ohio State. Now I think the at-large team from the West Coast is probably going to be the 2 seed, and then Ohio State will probably be the 3 seed, although they still play Penn State one more time. So you're going to have a good battle between the at-large team or the maybe not the at-large team because maybe SC could be upset, but the second-seeded West Coast team and Ohio State. That's going to be a battle.
So even if SC loses, you see them getting seated as number one?
They will get seated as number one, correct. Unless they just fall off the cliff the last month of the season, but I just don't see that happening.
That's kind of weird for a lot of people, I think, that don't follow men's volleyball. John, you know, it's not March Madness. It's like USC's pretty much, I said this a little while ago on the show, what's weird about it is they're pretty much locked into the Final Four a month
before
season ends, to be honest with you.
Well, you know, but it is pretty similar to when you look at how basketball's set up, Geeter. I mean, if UCLA wins the Pac-10 in basketball and then loses in the first round of the Pac-10 tournament, it might affect their seed, but they're still going.
Good point. Good
you know, it's the at-large bids. The problem is, and the reason why this is tough for people to digest, is that there's only 4 spots in our NC2A tournament. So,
yeah, there should be 8.
Yeah, there should be 8 for sure. And so then that would change the discussion quite a bit. I mean, yeah, SC's having a great year, and if it was the equivalent of basketball, they'd know that they were going to the tournament too. The seeding would be a little bit different, but yeah, I think it's pretty consistent across sports. It's just hard for people to maybe understand that with volleyball because the tournament's so small.
John, aside from the top three teams, SC, BYU, Stanford, who do you not want to play first round?
You know, I don't think you want to go to BYU. Beating BYU at BYU is a difficult thing to do. The altitude just affects the ball. It is so hard to coach that, too. I've tried everything with my guys, you know. Don't talk about it, talk about it. Do this, do that. Serve from farther back. Serve with more topspin. It's a very difficult thing to go there and hit your serve and pass the ball. And so, obviously, those are the two keys to winning, and it's difficult to go there and win. So I think the team that draws BYU at BYU has a tough slog ahead. The rest of it's up in the air right now. I mean, everything between 4 and 8 is up in the air. So, I don't know. I think Hawaii's been playing great lately. I think they're getting better. We had a couple really tight matches with them, and I think they're a very good volleyball team. And obviously UCLA is getting better, too. I think they're doing a nice job. So, I don't know. I think it's going to be a battle either way. I'd love to host. You know, I'd love to get to that number 4 spot. We don't have the tiebreak with BYU or Stanford, so I don't think we could get much higher than that. So I'd love to get to 4, but, you know, anywhere, if that doesn't happen, it doesn't really matter to me. You know, I just want to get in the playoffs and give it a run in that first round.
John, we've been talking a lot on this program about the international game and about the coaching changes with Hugh McCutchen moving over to Minnesota and hearing from Doug Beal, his boss, and about the attraction of that national team job. We know you were on the short list. You were my pick this last time. Seemed to be the heir apparent for the men's position. But UC Irvine is a program you've built, and you continue to be very happy there. Talk about the attraction or detractors to the national team position for a college coach in a position similar to yours.
You know, I heard that discussion you guys had, and I think you hit it right on the head. I don't know if you've seen my employment records, Barney, but you're right. I have about 20 years in the UC system. So for me to leave is a very difficult decision for that reason. Financially, it's a tough move. And the hard part is you leave for 4 years, and unless you can get a leave of absence like Alan's been able to do and Marv's done in the past, there's a big risk there. Coaching a men's program is a great thing. The recruiting's a little bit easier than being on the women's side. I know the game really well. I know the people here. It's a nice place to be. And you leave that potentially and don't know what you're getting on the back end. And the international profession, if you go that direction professionally, is very different. It's just like you guys when you're competing overseas. You know, right. You're on the road. You're not living in the U.S. most of the time. It can be real difficult on coaches because, first of all, you probably don't have a lot of control over the players that are on your team. And if things don't go well, you're going to get fired, not the players. So the professional risk is pretty significant. And so for us to leave, that's a tough thing to do. And I said the same thing you did when Doug was interviewed, and he said he was thinking about the basketball model. That is interesting.
Yeah, that one really perked me up.
We need to digest that a little bit.
Yeah, I had never heard that before, John, and I thought.
I hadn't either. I've thought about it. You know, I think we've all thought about it. It was interesting to hear him say that, and I'm going to have to digest it too, Barney. I don't know that you could do it. You know, when I was doing the assistant coach thing with Hugh, I was doing essentially that type of time frame. You know, I was with the collegiate team the entire year, and then I'd take a week or less off and then dive into the international side. And doing that for even 3 years, not the entire quad, was a real grind for me, a real grind. Because it literally, with the men's game, it works out to be the exact opposite season. So you could actually do it. But, boy, it was tough, man. And that's part of the reason it was going to be really difficult for me to go and take that national team job. I was cooked. So you would have to have some really exceptional assistance on both sides. And yeah, I'm going to have to think about it, too. That's an interesting topic. I'll have to chat with Doug about it, too. But clearly that's the issue Doug has, is it's difficult to get college coaches to leave their college jobs. And I think that's always going to be a challenge for him. And ideally, he would like to have somebody completely leave their college position, because then there's no conflict of interest. I mean, that's the big problem I think a lot of people have with the leave of absences and those kinds of things, is because it gives somebody a competitive advantage in the recruiting process. And so he's aware of that. We've talked about it. And so he would love to get somebody just to leave so he doesn't have that problem and the coach doesn't have that problem and USA Volleyball is not getting criticized for that. And I think that's interesting. I think what they're going to have to do in order to do that is they're going to have to pay more. They're going to have to pay more than just be competitive with college positions. They're going to have to pay more money in order to get coaches to completely leave their jobs.
What do you think that more looks like? What's the dollar figure on that?
I don't know. You know, thinking about it here off the cuff, you'd have to pay them enough to where they could have a cushion of a few years after they were done with their quad so they could figure out what they were going to do next if they didn't want to go overseas and coach. I don't know. I'd have to think about it, Barn. That's a really good question. This whole concept requires a little bit of thought.
It's a weird one because if you look at the NBA versus college, even if you fail at one NBA franchise, once you have that experience, you might be able to go to another NBA franchise. But to go from a national team where maybe you're not happy or it's not working out, you can't really go to another national team. It does happen, but it's not the same availability.
Sure.
John, I want to know from you, outside of the money or some of the other things, what is attractive about the national team job from a coaching perspective?
Oh, just working with the best and playing against the best. It's fascinating. I loved every moment of that when I was with the team, and I loved working with you and being on the edge and watching the best athletes in the world play the game. And I mean, it is fun to be on the edge, and it's a ton of pressure. I mean, it's just I think about the pressure that's involved with the, you know, here at Irvine or any of the collegiate teams, and we're trying to win a national championship, and it happens every year. So you get these chances, and then you go and you're on the national team, and there's nothing, and maybe Reed could chime in here, there's nothing I've felt in terms of pressure more than that Olympic qualifier. When you're playing in that Olympic qualifier, and it happens once every 4 years, and it's on the line, I've never been in a match quite like that before. It is intense. And then obviously to get to the Olympics, and that only happens once every 4 years, it is, you have to be completely on your game, and that is a really attractive challenge.
It's funny, I don't feel that pressure when you're playing it, but certainly at any level, when you have no control over it, you seem to be able to concentrate on the pressure, and it really bothers me. Having played in some important matches, qualifications, and Olympic games and stuff, you never think about it while you're playing,
right.
But from a coaching side of things, it's got to be so challenging.
Well, I don't think, first of all, I'm not saying pressure in a negative way. I think it was great. You know, I think it was in an incredible position to be forced to that level. You had to be so on your game. And the second thing, I think, Barney, is that I have such a great contrast to that. I'm going from the collegiate game, and then a week later I'm the international game. And I bounce back and forth, and I can look at both. When you were playing your international career, you just got used to it because that was the frame of reference that you had, and it just was natural for you. For me, it was bouncing back and forth and being able to observe the real differences. That was really interesting to me.
John, will you help out in a similar manner? You mentioned how you did work with Coach McCutcheon leading up to 2008. Have you been on Alan Knight's short list? Have you been in the gym? Or are you going to help out in the lead up to London?
Yeah, actually, I don't know. I think I can talk about it. I am going to help them out. I have met with Alan a bunch of times, actually, over the last couple of years. Like I mentioned before, the time that I put in with you over that period of time was a real grind. So Alan asked me, you know, how could I be involved? And I said, well, these are some of the parameters that I would need in order for me to be involved like I was before. And he was very accommodating, and I'll be back in the gym starting late this summer. And I'll be with the team at the World Cup and Norsekas, and I'm still debating about what I need to do with the Olympic qualifier. I know it's such an important tournament, but that's the beginning of the collegiate season, so it's kind of tough for me. But then I'll be World League and the Olympics. So, yeah, I'm in.
Hey, Johnny, you know, we talked a lot about earlier on the show about, you know, superstars in basketball and in volleyball and role players and you know, until you're on a team and coaching on a team, you know, a lot of people don't, from the outside, don't realize how important everyone is. What was your role on that national team that won a gold medal, and where does that gold medal rank in all the things that you've been a part of?
My role? You know, the nice thing about my relationship with you is that it was very open. You know, we were able to argue and debate, and it never affected our relationship. Him and I are really tight, and we went through a lot together. That's just an incredibly emotional experience. And I think my role was just to assist him in doing the job and maybe coaching a part of the game when I was in practice, and certainly during the matches I did defense. And, I don't know. I just did whatever I could to help win and help out in any way that I could. And in terms of where that win is in my professional career, it's absolutely at the top. You know, I just to be a part of that and see that and to go through what we went through, especially at the Olympics with everything that went on, I mean, it's just what an incredible story and to be part of that. And Reed knows how fine the edge is between winning and losing at that level, just a play here, a point there. And, you know, we're down against Serbia in the fifth and we're down against Russia in the fifth. And here's an incredible story. You guys were talking a little bit about it. I'm on the bench and I have the headset on, and Marv, I'm talking with Marv at the baseline. And we're down in the fifth and Volkov is in the front row and I have the defensive chart, but Marv's keeping a chart too. And Marv says to me, commit here. And I look at my chart and there's no indication that there should be a commit here. I mean, they didn't set it the last time around. Volkov's the middle and David Lee's matched up with him. And there's no reason for them to commit. And I look at him thinking, gosh, there's no way this should happen. And then I consciously thought to myself, Marv has been here before.
Yeah. There's a reason why he wants you.
Yeah. And I was like, you know what? I'm going with Marv. And I stood up and I yelled to David. Fortunately, the English for the Russian setter isn't very good. And I said, go, David, go, David. And David committed and stuffed Volkov. And I think that might have been the play of the Olympic Games. That might have been the gold medal play. And that gave us the turnaround and came back and beat Russia in five. So,
wow. Do you ever talk to Marv about why he thought that?
You just look over at Marv. Marv probably give you just a shrug and a smile.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. You know, I think it's gut instinct for Marv there, and I just decided to go with his gut, and turned out to be the right call. Pretty incredible moment to see that. So
I'll go with Marv. I'll go
with Marv. Marv's been there a bunch.
That's great. Switching gears back to college, Johnny, you know, it's coming up on your last few weeks here. I know you got the Bruins coming up. Give me something for UCI that you guys really just one area where you think you need to get a little bit better at, where you think, hey, this team, you know, can make a run deep in the playoffs.
Gosh, that's a good question. Lately, our passing hasn't been great. So we've got to pass the ball a little bit better. Offensively, we're actually a pretty good volleyball team. When we're passing the ball really well, we run a fast offense. Carson's pretty good on the right. Our outside hitters, Corey Yoder's been having just an outstanding year. So I think when we're passing the ball, we can side out with anybody. And defense has not been our best defensive team. I've juggled around liberos a little bit this year. And, you know, we have Anthony Spittle up at the net who's, you know, not going to stuff a lot of balls. So, you know, it hasn't been a great defensive team. So, you know what, I just want to side out at a high rate. So if we can pass and serve tough, we got to serve tough. You know, I think this team in particular, we just have to hit the heck out of it. And if we win, great. And if we lose because we have too many missed serves, we lose. I think we're kind of like a three-point shooting team this year. We just got to hit our serve hard, and if it works for us, then we're going to win.
Are your guys listening to the show yet?
I don't know. I think so. I mean, we talk about it a little bit. I don't know if they're – my guess is these guys are all in class right now. Let's hope.
Yeah, it's all about it's all about downloading an idea.
Yeah, so my guess is these guys listen to it on downloads.
Attaboy, attaboy.
Yeah.
John, we touched on earlier the idea of expanding the field for NCAA men's in the playoffs, but let's talk about expanding the overall number of teams and scholarships. How much discussion is there about that? I don't know if we've asked you this question before, but – how much discussion is there when coaches get together, or you talk with the NCAA and interact with the NCAA about the lack of scholarship money really inhibiting the growth of this sport that I think otherwise would be huge, would be just as big as women's if you gave out an equal number of scholarships?
It's a very interesting debate, and we have talked about it. And the NCAA committee is very interactive with us, I think. Russ Yurick is the head of that, and he's been great to talk to and gives us some insight. You know, obviously the debate is, we want more opportunities for guys to compete. You know, the youth level, the numbers have been increasing for years, and USA Volleyball has those numbers. It's pretty striking. There's more and more boys playing the game and less places for them to go play. So how do you increase those numbers of opportunities? Do you do that by increasing scholarship dollars, or do you do that by trying to expand the number of schools that have programs? And if you do that, if that's the direction you go, then you probably want to keep the scholarship numbers where they are, because if you up the number of scholarship dollars per team, it's inhibiting to add more teams. I don't know. I don't know what the right answer is there. Personally, I'd like to see some more scholarship dollars because I'd like to see more athletes come in and commit themselves completely to volleyball. I think that's But it's an interesting debate. You know, we don't get the basketball guys because basketball guys are going to play for full rides. And if we had more money and we were offering more full rides, maybe we'd get higher-level athletes. But, you know, obviously this is all a moot point right now because the economy is so bad and it's affecting everybody. And expansion opportunities are limited in just about every way right now. But it's a good topic to discuss for 5 years out, and that's obviously what we need to be thinking about.
And you're also saying, unlike the UCLA teams of the early 90s, your kids are going to class.
Yeah, Seeley's not trying to talk me into going bowling at the old bowling alley at UCLA anymore, you know?
If people only knew. I mean, Nye was years in the Cosby Show, Family Ties, and Seeley's bowling.
Yeah, Eric Sullivan and I aren't trying to throw water balloons from Dykstra Room 710 out onto Gailey Avenue and hit cars, which is a true story, by the way. And you'll have to have them tell it one time, although they probably won't do it justice.
Okay.
Hey, we got about 30 seconds, but how proud are you of the job Seals has done at UCLA and one of your boys getting that job, a big-time Pac-10 women's job?
I'm so happy for him, and everything's going so well. I actually had dinner with him this past weekend. Seems to be doing really well, and he's going to be a great one. You know, he's just so smart. We'd be studying organic chemistry together, and I needed to work at that. And Seeley, and this is not exaggerating, we were in summer school in OChem one time, and he'd always be like, let's go bowling. Let's go bowling. I was like, Seeley, this is organic chemistry, man. No, let's go bowling. And what we do, we'd go bowling because he talked me into it. So, you know, he's so bright, and he's so intuitive, and I think he loves the game. He's really good at it. He's going to be a great coach.
Killed it again, Johnny Spraw.
John Spraw, right. Hey, coach.
Can we get you back on during playoff time? Give us a little preview?
Absolutely. I'd love to chat about it. It'll be interesting to see how it all finishes up here.
John, we wish you the best.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Johnny Spraw.
Okay, take care.
Thanks for spending the time. See you.
You just always known Spraw was going to be a star in the coaching world. He's just one of those guys that everyone kind of knew that when he first came on the scene, too.
He's a smart guy.
Yeah, he's really a smart guy.
Very,
you know,
very
John's
smart
a great
guy.
Player. A UCLA. He was a great
player.
He was a great role player.
Okay.
Dude, he has his. I think he hit 1,000 or something in the national championship game. He had a great match. He's got titles. He's a good volleyball player.
Was he and Tim Kelly in the middle? That was the middle.
Well, when I lost to them, it was TK. It was TK and Nygaard. I think then it was Nygaard and Spraw.
Okay. I remember. I came on just on the tail end of Spraw.
Yeah.
Saw him at the very end of his time in college and kind of beginning
solid
of my
blocker.
Knowledge of volleyball. I wonder why they let 35-year-old guys play.
I know you hate the word great. He's a really good attacker. Can I say that? Can
sure.
I say
oh, great
attacker?
Role player is a good way to describe it. I mean, we get into this debate about gradients, you know, superstars, stars, great, not great.
According to you, Russ Rose is the only great coach in the history of volleyball.
I knew you were going back there.
Embarrassing comment maybe we've ever had on this show.
All right.
Making love music? What's going on over there, bud? Let's get it going.
Thinking about Jen again.
So what do you guys think? The NBA volley teams next week?
No. We're going to do it now.
Just
we're
keeps
do
getting
it.
Pushed off. I'm supposed to leave in 10 minutes. I got a news for you. Getting text
well,
from the wife.
Well, we have
so 10
minutes
out,
to do it. We're going to take 15 seconds and be right back. NBA all volleyball team coming up. Here on the volleyballnetwork.com. Appreciate you tuning in for another episode. Aaron Wachtfogel talked about his new clothing company early on. We had a call from Matt Boyce. College Volleyball Weekly keeps rolling. Correspondents bringing us great information, and the men of Troy continuing to dominate men's volleyball in the collegiate scene. And UCI men's head coach John Spraw just joined us. He's one of the greats, one of the good guys. He's going to be around for a long time. He's going to be one of those guys we're going to talk about. The way we talk about Dunphy and Skates, we're going to talk about Spraw that way, I think, in another 15, 20 years when he's multiple national championships, time with the national team, all the stuff that he does.
No doubt, Foo.
going to be one of those guys. So to wrap it up today, we're going to finally get to our all-time basketball team made of volleyball players.
We did the opposite.
Right.
We did NBA guys playing volleyball a few weeks back.
Correct.
Now we're doing volleyball guys playing basketball. Hoops.
So, who's your point guard? You want to start point guard or center? Geeter, I'll give you the choice. Where do you want to go?
Are you talking about my all-time? I have two teams. I have an all-time team and a current team. So you tell me if I'm going to just go real...
No, this was an all-time.
Why don't you go starting lineup first?
Okay. All right, starting lineup all-time.
Starting lineup. Nope, starting lineup on my current team now.
Oh, sorry.
Aaron Wachvogel is going to play the one because I need a grinder guy that's going to play defense. He can shoot. He can score when needed. And he's a great worker and a great leader. Sean Rosenthal is my two. Mad Hop's got a great jump shot from behind the three. Can take it to the rack and handle the ball and can defend. Scotty Lane is my three. And if you guys have ever seen Scotty Lane play hoops, he's probably one of the best volleyball hoops players we've had in a long, long time. Incredible length, slasher type, can take you inside and out.
And he's a beater, too. Oh. He will put you in the post and pummel you.
Backing up Scotty Lane, Hans Stolfus. People don't know this, but Hans Stolfus went to play college basketball.
Really?
Absolutely. Incredible dunker.
For whom?
Fast. Hawaii.
Oh. Okay.
Hans Stolfus is on that team. Battling for the five spot is going to be Austin Rester and Phil Dahlhauser. Phil because he's Phil, and he's 6'9", he's the Beijing Beast, and he's tall. And Austin Rester because he played college basketball. Thick, big, can rebound. And at the four, Matt Furbringer was All-State, one of the best players in California when he was in high school, won a state championship at Estancia High School. I go to my all-time team. I'm going Johnny the Steve, John Stevenson, as your point. He is buff. He is gnarly. He is competitive.
He's a little nutty.
He's crazy as a loon, and he's a winner. Okay, Mike Dodd, who played at San Diego State, is going to be my two.
A two?
I love a 6'5", two. Absolutely not. He was a guard. He can handle the ball at
6'5". Isn't he 6'10"?
Yeah, he's a matchup problem for a lot of people. A matchup problem for a lot of people. Can also play the post and take you outside. Mike Whitmarsh, the great late dear friend of mine, Mike Whitmarsh. I'm getting no arguments from there. I will scream at you, and you will be off the show
forever. What position is he playing?
He's going to play the three, and that's what people didn't know about him. Witty was a big, but a way better outside shooter. Was not great in the post. You bring Witty outside.
The Bill Weddington kind of guy?
And he was a lot faster than people think. Mike Whitmarsh, phenomenal three. I got the Hov. I got the Hov at my power forward spot. Hov is a great basketball player.
He's your team captain,
too. He's nasty. He's got Rodman in him, but he can score. And he's your team captain, and he's gonna heckle every opponent you have. And then I got Furby in that five spot because Furbs was, people don't realize this, one of the best basketball volleyball guys of all time. Maybe Bob Samuelson backing him up.
Having just played against Furbringer a little bit and kind of warm up like basketball volleyball with a volleyball, Furbringer, he's on the list for sure.
Furbringing it,
dude. It's all about body control.
Guys, got one of those? You have a problem with that? With those two teams? Reed, Kevin.
No problems there.
Was it? No.
Sorry, I had to break down.
I got a question. Whitmarsh at the three. Seems like you'd want him to play the five.
No.
He's like a Bill Weddington. You remember Bill Weddington? We were talking about the Bulls earlier.
Don't ever call Mike Whitmarsh.
Three-headed
Bill
center.
Ever.
Bill Weddington, the reason he was a problem is because he was the center, but he could shoot from 15 feet. You're telling me that's what Whitmarsh could do?
Oh, no. Whitmarsh was good from three. Absolutely.
Okay. Reed? You got a list over there in Russia?
I'll go fast. I had help with mine, actually. Loy helped me out. Actually, Loy is on the team, and I'm not going to go by positions. Okay, maybe I will. Seth Ring, J. Ring's brother, Oregon State High School, All-State player, real good baller. Dexter Rogers, if you guys remember him. Loy helped me out with that. Apparently, he was a good basketball player, four-year starter at Westmar University. Adam Keefe, two-sport athlete from Stanford.
There you go.
Let's see. I had Witty, Mike Whitmarsh in there.
Yeah.
Kevin Hansen, also a great basketball player.
Remember, Witty was a three in the NBA, just so you guys know.
I mean,
he literally played in the NBA as a three.
Who?
Whitmarsh.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize he was in the NBA.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Adam Keith.
I had last three. Chase Budinger. I mean, he kind of counts as a volleyball player.
Reed, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, Chase Budinger.
And then Wilt Chamberlain.
Yep.
I'm counting him as a volleyball player because he played professional volleyball.
Unbelievable. It's a loophole there, I think.
That's my team. I also have Vince Carter because he played high school volleyball too. But those guys are on my bench.
You know,
like my starting team.
You can't have Carter on your team. He's a divisive force.
Reed brings up a good point. I mean, Wilt, obviously, you could put Wilt in there, Chase as well. But, you know, we're talking guys that maybe played a little bit longer. Judd Bush will play in a couple AVP tournaments. Obviously, Judd would be on the team. But, you know, I think we're kind of sticking with guys that played mostly volleyball and you didn't know they played hoops.
Are you saying his team, your team is better than his team?
No. He had a great team. Okay. He had a great team.
I have Karch as my starting point guard.
You're just trying to cause problems.
I am. Because he's going to lead the team, and he's going to yell at the ref when he needs to, and maybe tear down a net on occasion.
Tear down a basket stander.
My shooting guard's Fenoy. I play basketball with him in the gym. The guy never misses from the outside. He may miss a layup from time to time, but from the outside, he won't miss.
With you on him, he does not miss, correct?
Ask Geeter when the three of us played one-on-one.
Hitter Barney.
My left-hand hook shot over Geet. He remembers that. It was on TV, too, I think.
You're incredible right now, dude.
Wow.
You are incredible right
now. My small forward is Phil Dullhauser because he's going to cause matchup problems at the three.
And he's going to jump goofy foot. No one's going to know what to do with
exactly.
that.
Exactly. And then my power forward was Witty. Didn't realize he played the three. Thought he would play the four. But
he
that's another anything. Matchup problem.
It's okay, guys. He can play both.
And then I had Furby at center. Yeah.
All right.
We're going to run, too.
I'm going to put Keith at center. I'm going to put Witty at the four because I like his size more because I'm going to put Furbringer at the three. And those guys can play like a pair of small forwards if they want. I'm going to put me at the two.
Of course. Wow.
I'm surprised Geeter didn't put
No, actually, I take it back.
I wanted to put myself at point.
I'm not going
to
start myself. I'm going to sub myself in just because you're going to throw alley-oops to me. I'm not going to do anything else.
I'm down with that.
I'm not even going to handle the ball. You're just going to throw alley-oops from half court, and I'm going to slam the hell out of them. And that's my role.
Nice.
No. Point guard is a little bit more of a difficult discussion, I guess. How can you put Karch at your point guard?
Because he's going to lead the team. He's the leader.
Watt Fogle actually play basketball?
Yeah. He's a good basketball player growing up.
Reed, who is your point guard?
I had Seth Ring and Kevin Hansen. Great point guard.
We're really reaching there, aren't we?
Interesting.
Oh. Hey, you want to ball it up this summer? Let's get those guys in the gym.
I would love to ball it up if I can borrow someone's knees.
You can borrow mine. Mine are good.
I thought Reed had a solid squad.
Yeah, Reed did. I don't have a solid squad.
Jeremy, I'm not sure about yours. I got to really, really think about what you're bringing there.
Which one don't
you
like?
I'm just not sure. Name Karch at the one.
Yeah.
Doesn't Karch seem more like a two to you?
You played with Fenoy. He's two. I had Dax as my backup two, but the guy can't jump at all, but you know he can shoot from the outside. Think about it.
I'm going to put Todd Robinson.
You're talking about the all-time guys. I mean, Fenoy.
Look, I don't know.
Good basketball player at the spectrum.
Guy's playing for a 10-day contract right now at 24-Hour Fitness.
Like John Sproul said, it's all about your frame of reference, and that's Jeremy's frame of reference.
Yeah, it's my frame of reference. Deal with
right
it.
There. He doesn't know about the international game or the NBA. But, well, you
or the
know NBA. About
I don't
the
know
NBA.
About the NBA.
You should know about the NBA.
I've been in with the NBA for 7 seasons now, Kevin.
Well, then why are you putting Karch on your starting team?
Because you need somebody to lead the team. Look at the Clippers. We have
Make him a coach.
We have great point guards, but nobody leads the team.
Wait a second. Wasn't Karch on a show where he won the best athlete from various sports?
Thanks, Reed.
You know, Karch, by the way, Karch is phenomenal.
Yeah, shoot a basketball.
Phenomenal athlete.
Can he shoot a basketball?
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you seen him do it?
Absolutely.
You're full of it, right?
You need to shoot? I mean, Rajon Rondo. You can just dribble and dish.
Yeah.
Rajon Rondo is a fine example of someone who just dribble and dish.
Hey, listen. All right. Tell Loy, Reed, no big deal. I love him. Known him a long time, but you guys are co-captains. He's not captain himself.
Listen, that's the guy you left off that list. Lloyd Ball recruited by Indiana.
No. He was on my list.
He's legit. No, I'm talking about Geeter.
Oh.
That's right. Lloyd Ball.
Recruited by Indiana. Bob Knight in his living room telling him he should come play for the U. That's big time. He's going to play shooting guard on my team.
And we are not co-captains. I mean, he's the one on all the billboards.
That means I'm subbing in for Lloyd because you need a crazy athletic guy to stick in that spot just to do something silly, fire the crowd up.
Who's picking up the tab, you or Lloyd, when you guys go to dinner?
We go 50-50. Oh. Dag.
God. That's exciting.
All right, boys. It's been a big show. It's going to be a fun show.
You know what? We cheered Reed up a little bit. I feel like he's perked up since 8:30 a.m. He was a disaster.
Just don't let him check his bank account again and see that bonus money isn't there.
You don't. You didn't need to go there.
It's such a bummer.
I'm going to miss you guys for a
bitter Barney. I mean, he was bringing all three of us down today.
Yeah, dude. He's been. He's
just little quips here and there. You know what I mean? It's just like, oh, my knees. So I'm going to bring you down.
Reed, for 3 weeks he's been like this, has he not? We should probably have our own discussion about it off air through email without Kevin. Really talk.
Well, the Net Live will be here next week. I'm not sure I will be. I might be fired by then.
I will not be here.
You will not be here. The new baby will be here. You'll be changing diapers.
I'll be back in 2 weeks.
Very good. Jay Rowe?
I will be on the East Coast next Monday.
Right on. We will have a show for you next week. It's going to be a best of. Vote on Facebook.com. Get on there, TheNetLive/Facebook. TheNetLive. We're now ahead of Facebook. Facebook.com/TheNetLive. Get on there. Tell us about your favorite moments from last year. Tell us what they are. What do you want to hear again? Who do you want to hear from? We're interested in your opinion. Email us, TheNetLive@gmail.com. We've got a lot of great emails coming in from people. Trust me, folks. We listen to you. Even if the topics don't always make the show right away, we are reading and listening to those emails.
Johnny Johnson.
So Reed from Russia. Geeter headed to the hospital, maybe directly, checking his text. DJ Rowe doing whatever it is he does. Smooth operator headed to another Clippers game. And I'll be here doing the dishes. The Net Live. Thanks for being here. We'll see you again soon.